It's time for TWiT this week in tech. A great show, a great panel planned for you. We're going to talk a little bit about the new Google Fiber, what NBC did wrong with the Olympics, and Apple's new iPhone. Will it be a hit or a flop? It's all coming up next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Audio bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by the new Winamp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android. Video bandwidth for TWiT is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 364, recorded July 29th, 2012. It's a beautiful day in the fiberhood. This Week in Tech is brought to you by GoToMeeting with HD Faces from Citrix. All you need is a webcam and a click to turn your online meeting into a high-definition video conference. Meet with colleagues anywhere in the world, even from an iPad. Sign up for your 30-day free trial today. Visit GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button, use the promo code TWIT. And by FreshBooks, the easy online invoicing app for small business that saves time and gets you paid faster. Join over 3.5 million FreshBooks users and try the service free for 30 days of unlimited use at FreshBooks.com. Make sure you tell them you heard about it on TWIT. And by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it right from your desk. To get this special offer, go to Stamps.com, click the radio microphone, and enter TWIT. That's Stamps.com, offer code TWIT. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your iPhone, iPad, MacBook, or Android smartphone from your home or office. Find out what your gadget is worth at Gazelle.com. It's time for TWiT, This Week in Tech, the show that covers the technology news of the week by bringing together some of the most interesting technology journalists in the world, starting all the way over to my right, no, to my left, that way is left, with Dwight Silverman. You're usually over here, Dwight. We flip-flopped you. Dwight Silverman from the Houston Chronicle and blogs.cron.com/tech. Hey, Dwight.
I'm so confused. I'm reversed. How are you, Leo?
Very well. How are things in Houston? What's the weather like? Is it very hot and muggy?
Actually, no, it has not been that hot. We have been had a lot of rain and, in fact, floods and cooler weather while the breadbasket of the country bakes in 104-degree temperatures.
Wow.
So it's actually not too bad down here. And we also got named, Houston got named by Forbes the coolest city in America. And you can imagine the jokes.
What?
Yes.
Wow. What?
Yes. And not in temperature wise. It just as we're like super cool.
Is it really cool in Houston? I always thought Houston was kind of a little, drab.
Well, if you live outside the main, there's like three loops.
The downtown is like really
right,
warm.
The downtown area, right. It's kind of weird. Houston reminds me now of what Austin was in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
Kind of this burgeoning arts and intellectual community. And so it's kind of cool to be here right now. It really is an interesting time.
That's exciting.
Time.
Yeah, because I've never been outside of the downtown. You know, I've been to the Astrodome and I've been outside of the downtown. And that's just kind of a bland downtown. All the oil money, frankly. But you are on the Gulf. I mean, there should be some cultural... You know,
there is. There's kind of the areas around downtown, what's called the Montrose and Midtown and the Heights.
Yeah.
It's very much a kind of an arts and intellectual community, and it's really burgeoning at the moment.
I think you should do a festival. You could call it South by Southeastern, and it would be a little west of the East. And I don't know. You could do so. I don't know. Just take it over from Austin.
Okay, I'm on it.
Good to have you. Also from Time Magazine. And the technologizer, Harry McCracken, is here. Good to see you, Harry.
Hey, Leo.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Love it when you're in studio.
Always fun.
Your lovely wife is here, too.
She's out there.
I saw her somewhere.
She's
wandering
out
through.
Way in the corner.
She's hiding.
Out of
there
view.
She is. Oh, you're in the living room. All right. We can't see her. She's blocked. Also here, Ken Ray from, I want to say Rochester, but it's Buffalo.
It is Buffalo.
Buffalo, New York. Good to have
Not
you, Ken.
The coolest city in the world, according to Forbes.
In the running, though.
It may well be,
You're near Niagara Falls. That's cool.
We're very near Niagara Falls, yeah. And there's a lot of, not that either of us, I think, are working for the Chamber of Commerce for our respective cities, but things are happening here. Sure.
I kind of like to emphasize the fact that this is you know, the people are from all over. It's kind of fun that we get, you know, because of Skype, we're able to talk to people all over the place.
That is a very cool thing.
We're going to begin the show today with a special visit from the host of This Week in Enterprise Tech and a regular on Twit, Father Robert Ballister, who was at DEF CON. We've given you the special priest monitor there. I like it. Robert, welcome. You survived DEF CON.
Just barely. It was about 115 degrees inside and out. It was fantastic.
Oy. And, of course, and I know when Patrick Norton used to go to DEF CON, he would never bring any technology with him. Did you were you able to not get hacked is the question?
I did not get hacked, but that's only because I basically turned everything off. DEF CON wanted to establish a secure network. So they actually had two different Wi-Fi networks that people could log into. The first was actually quite secured. It had a VPN tunnel to the outside world, so no one else at the conference could see you. It was using WPA2, and you had to download a certificate. But even then, most of us didn't log in. They had a second network, which they called Free Range, and that was basically take your life into your own hands. Connect to this, and you will get hacked.
There's a wall of shame, right, where people who get hacked get their stuff put up on the wall.
Absolutely. They call it the wall of sheep. It's this huge screen that they project up on the side of the wall, and in real time, it shows usernames and passwords of people who have transmitted their data.
Do you have your badge still?
I do.
Can you show us?
It's plugged in right now. So this is known as an inhuman badge. So the human badges, which is what the attendees were wearing, were all white. And then you had speakers, vendors, artists, media, and goons. And they had different colored badges that were called inhuman. Actually, they did a fantastic thing today at this conference. They wanted to emphasize the social nature of the conference.
Cool.
In fact, several times, Dark Tangent, who runs the conference, and Lost, who actually created this, they wanted people to actually talk to someone else. They said, look, you're on your computer 363 days a year. Why not go ahead and talk to someone who's real, standing next to you? And so what they did was they put a gaming aspect into the badge. There's a crypto challenge. There was actually created by Lost, in which the participants at the conference had to decipher a cryptological challenge. Well, it was embedded into the badges. Oh, you lost me, didn't you?
Nope. But if you think...
Oh. You had a premonition.
He's hacked.
See, he's a priest, so he has early information. All right, we'll get Robert back. This is really cool, though. There were 21 total different shapes, 21 unique styles. Each of these is a circuit board running a propeller, a 32-bit multi-core processor with an infrared LED and receiver for badge-to-badge communication. This is, by the way, from the Parallax forums. Ken Gracie writing about the DEF CON badges. A bank of 8 LEDs, a USB circuit for data access and programming. Each attendee receives 2 PS2 adapters and a VGA connector. So it's kind of like the Raspberry Pi. This is a small computer. They can actually go to the Hardware Hacking Village and turn their badge into a computer system. 3 AAA batteries supposedly could run the badge for the entire conference. And then at the DEF CON opening ceremony, they got information about the challenge. That's what Robert started to talk about before he was cut off by the NSA. And I guess this looks like a terminal that people are using to start. This is really cool. This is really, really, really cool.
Have you been to DEF CON, Leo?
I have not. I'm scared. Have you?
I have not been.
Anybody else? Jeff or Ken? Dwight or Ken, have you been there?
No. I haven't been, but my colleagues go every year. I was going to go last year, but...
said your colleague got hacked this year.
Yes. He, and what's... He is the IT director and head of security for his company, so I don't know how... I'm hoping that it was ironic that he actually was making a joke, but it didn't look like it to me.
His Twitter account was starting to post some garbage.
Yes.
I'm scared, you know, and Patrick was always took it very seriously. He said he would never go with a computer because he knew it was just a little too...
Well, if I would go, I would go with a computer that essentially was wiped clean and dedicated only for use there.
Right.
And it may actually be easier with something like an iPad or a smartphone, you know, if you can get on your own networks, you know, your broadband network. But yeah, to log into the free range, I think that would be a real challenge to stay unhacked on that.
Yeah.
That'd be fun.
Yeah, I mean, if you go with your own LTE connection, you turn the Wi-Fi off.
How much trouble could you get in?
Well, I'd hope you would be safe, but I don't know. Maybe you wouldn't be.
So there is Robert with his badge. Did you ever figure out what the hack was, Robert?
Yes, actually. So what you had to do, you would synchronize your badge with as many other people as you possibly could. And every time you synchronized the badge, you got another bit. And at the very end, it would unlock the next crypto key for the challenge. And it would tell you where you should look in order to go to the next level. It was a little bit of a Ready Player One in the game.
Sounds like fun. So tell me what we learned, because every year at DEF CON and Black Hat before it, Black Hat is the official kind of more business-oriented convention, right? And then DEF CON is the more hacker-oriented convention. But every year, people bring their best exploits, and you hear about all sorts. I remember we heard about how people could use a power port to break into motel room electronic locks. What else did we learn at DEF CON?
Well, this was an interesting year because I think the most exploity, if I can coin a term, presentation was NFC. And it was shown how you could basically hack the NFC of an NFC phone or an NFC tablet in order to take over the device. But the presenter made it very clear, and he showed us in the example that this was a proof of concept.
Right.
The device would basically have to be in a state that it would never be in a million years in the wild. So I think DEF CON this year moved a little bit away from the exploits because we had a special visitor. It was General B. Alexander, the head of the NSA.
First time there. Right. Yeah.
That's so strange. Yeah. He came in to actually speak to DEF CON.
Wow.
He's become a friend of the leader of DEF CON, Dark Tangent. And he basically said, look, we know you're going to hack. We know that you are some of the most skilled hackers in the country. So if you're going to hack, why not hack for your country? So there was a little bit of a rah-rah pitch. I'm not really sure how that went over.
I kind of like that, though. I think that's not a bad idea. I think that nothing can come of a friendship between the director of the NSA and Dark Tangent, however.
But, right.
But I think that that's actually a good call to hackers to say, well, you know, you're going to hack. Why don't you do it for good, not evil?
Right. And they actually had a table in the vendor area where you could get more information. And it was empty for the first 3 or so hours of the conference. But then people started trickling over to the table just to get information. Ridiculing them. But I think there's actually a general interest in doing something constructive. Or, perhaps speaking a bit more conspiratorially, they just wanted access to all the toys that the NSA has.
Well, traditionally at DEF CON and Black Hat, there's always been feds there. You know, it was always kind of where feds and hackers would meet a lot of FBI agents and so forth.
Right.
Because they're looking for information about what's going on, too. They want to keep their ear to the ground.
Right. And Alexander made it very clear. He had a presentation before Congress earlier this year in which he said, look, if you want us to be able to compete with cyber hacking, cyber cracking and cyber terrorism, we need to recruit the best. And guess what? The best are found at events like DEF CON.
Yeah.
So we need a little bit of leeway in bringing these people into the fold.
They do a Spot the Fed. Did they do Spot the Fed? Because it wasn't too hard to find the Fed this time. The Spot the Fed contest.
General Alexander was off limits for Spot the Fed.
Oh, okay.
but yeah, they do it every year. If any of you have never been to DEF CON, I think the best way I could describe it is picture CES crossed with South by Southwest crossed with Burning Man. I mean, that's really, honestly, the best combination I can think of.
That sounds so awesome. So,
but I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just wondering if the challenge, badge challenge. You said somebody did solve it, or?
Yes, it's been solved. The weird thing was when we got the badges the day before, there were a group of us who sat outside the hallway for what's called the Hardware Hacking Village, which is the official place where people go to modify things and learn how to solder. Well, there was about 12 of us, and we just started hacking through the code. We dumped the binaries of the badges. It helped that I had a press badge because my code was different, so we were able to do differential analysis. But we figured out about 60% of the contest before the contest even started. That's sort of what you get at DEF CON. And what we found out was the crypto challenge wasn't just on the badge. This pointed you to a page that said that the lanyard that the badge was attached to was actually part of the challenge.
Awesome.
Which then told you that the floors, the way that the floors were arranged and the decals on the floors were part of the challenge, which told you that the signs were part of the challenge. It was this wonderful Easter egg hunt of crypto.
It sounds like this is a very fun conference. This is the 20th DEF CON. Have you been to others?
The last one I went to was DEF CON 1.
What?
Oh.
So
were you a little baby hacker then?
I was. I wasn't even in the seminary yet. So these sort of bookends of hackery here.
Wow, that's so cool. And did anybody think you were a Fed?
there's actually a very high-ranking DEF CON personality who goes by the nickname Priest. So
they thought you were
Well, the people who were new thought that I might be Priest. The people who had gone to DEF CON before and knew what Priest looked like, he's incredibly tall and incredibly not olive-skinned. they thought that I was trying to impersonate Priest, so I actually had a goon who threatened to beat me up. That was kind of fun.
He had a goon badge.
He had a goon badge. Right. Oh, yeah. Goons are these people who, they're volunteers.
They're security
so
guys.
They come, they're security guys. They set up, they basically do anything the organizers ask them to do. Absolutely fantastic. I mean, if any of those goons are watching right now, you people keep that show running. If it wasn't for you, DEF CON wouldn't happen.
That is so cool. Well, I'm glad you went. Somebody's saying Twitch should have coverage of DEF CON. Well, yeah, we did. It's called Robert Ballister, our host
and
for... Yes?
We will be bringing in a little bit for Twyatt, some of the DEF CON coverage. The problem with DEF CON is they're incredibly sensitive about taking pictures and video.
Right.
They're very, very shy.
Do you have anything you can show us, or is it...
I do. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to, render it beforehand.
Save it for Twyatt.
I'll save it for Twyatt.
And we had sent you with a mission, which was to get us a Raspberry Pi. What happened?
It was mission aborted. I was actually in line. I showed up at 8 o'clock in the morning vendor table that wouldn't open until 10.
Wow.
And because I figured there's 12,000 people at the conference, the 4,000 Raspberry Pis will sell out like hotcakes.
Yeah.
We got in, and the Raspberry Pi table was empty.
They didn't show up.
Yeah. I think we scared them.
I think they owe us a Raspberry Pi.
They owe us a Raspberry Pi.
Thank you, Robert. Robert Ballister is the host of This Week in Enterprise Tech, Monday, 12 noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC. You'll have full coverage of DEF CON tomorrow.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Robert. Great to talk to you.
Great to talk to you, Leo.
Thanks.
Take care.
Thanks to go for going to DEF. Actually, we have another assignment. You're going to Burning Man in September. You ready?
I'm all set, and I will wear the collar.
Okay. Maybe nothing else but the collar.
Absolutely.
I don't think the Vatican knows about him. He's undercover. Thanks, Robert. Great to talk to you.
Take care.
I love it. We're going to take a break. Come back with the top stories. We're going to talk about the Olympics and NBC botching it. Have you been following? There's a new Twitter account. NBC delayed their first tweet an hour ago. Breaking. American colonists announce independence. King to respond. And more tweets to come. Should people be upset about what NBC is doing with the Olympics? And will this be the last non-internet Olympics? We'll also talk about, there's lots. Mountain Lion, I'm going to get the opinions of OS Ken, Mac OS Ken, and more. But first, a word from our friends at Citrix, who do the great GoToMeeting product of meeting. Now during the summertime, meeting is always tough. People are traveling. They're all about those staff meetings if possible. Sometimes, you know, you want to do a pitch to a client. He's, you know, in Cabo San Lucas. No problem. Fire up GoToMeeting. Did he bring his iPad? Did she bring her iPhone? She can join that meeting. In fact, what's really cool, this new HD Faces feature. GoToMeeting's always had screen sharing. It's best screen sharing out there. So you could show them the PowerPoint, the presentation. But now, if you're on a PC or a Mac with a camera, you get the video, and really good video. I mean, just superb video. They even support the iPad, so you can go to a meeting, attend a meeting on the iPad, send video, listen through the headphones, use the iPad's mic, the whole thing, and you're there, even if you're, you know, on vacation. GoToMeeting is a great solution, and now is a good time to try it free for 30 days. Here's what I want you to do. Visit the website, GoToMeeting.com. Click that orange Try It Free button smack dab in the middle there. And when they ask for a promo code, use our show title, TWIT, right? That's all. T-W-I-T right in there. And we'll get a little credit for it. We do appreciate that. And if you haven't tried it or you're looking for great online meeting software, there's none better than GoToMeeting. Visit them online. GoToMeeting.com. Use a promo code TWIT. And do try it with the camera because I think you'll be blown away. Somebody was – when you were giving the Chad tour, Chad does a tour. And I invite our – once again, a great studio audience. Thank you all for being here. At the end of the show, Chad has been giving tours, right, of the studio?
Yep, absolutely.
You take him in the basement?
Yep. Show him everything.
So somebody was here last week and said, well, why don't you use GoToMeeting instead of Skype? And we've talked to the engineers at GoToMeeting. They're working on it. But the problem right now is GoToMeeting, what we want is one full screen of video, and GoToMeeting doesn't do that for the calls yet. So, but I think it's a matter of time. GoToMeeting.com/ offer code TWIT. Promo code TWIT. So who came here from the farthest away? Anybody from outside the U.S. here today? Where are you from, sir? Montreal. Beautiful area.
In a Captain America shirt.
In a Captain America shirt.
But, hey, America's North America.
Is there a Captain Canada? No Captain Canada. Just Captain America. Okay. Anybody from farther than Montreal? All right. Well, we welcome you all. There's about, I don't know, 15... Well, it's nice. If you want to come visit us and watch the shows, any of the shows live, please do come by. We're open, and we get people all through the week. It's really fun.
Somebody in chat is pointing out Captain Canuck, who has an actual character.
Captain Canuck.
Yes.
There is a Captain Canuck.
Yes.
Okay. Isn't Canuck, let me tell you, is Canuck kind of considered like a, you know, a little bit of an insult, a little pejorative?
Well, I'm from the province of Quebec, so...
You're not crazy about those Anglophones anyways. The hell with them. Actually, our IT guy, Russell Tamney, just came back from Quebec today, had a wonderful time in Montreal. And he said, thank goodness for the Francophones, because you've preserved this unique cultural identity. And it's just up the road a piece from Buffalo, where Ken Ray is currently having Skype trouble. And we'll get him back on in a minute. So I love the Olympics. The Summer Olympics, to me, are a wonderful event. But I have to say, I was a little disappointed. Friday, I'm watching Twitter. Everybody's tweeting, there's James Bond, there's the Queen. My God, they're forging the rings. And I'm thinking, I want to see this. And I went online, NBCOlympics.com, where they're doing, streaming Olympics. They said, well, sorry, you have to have a cable, satellite, or teleco connection that gets MSNBC and CNBC to qualify to watch this. So I logged into my Xfinity account and all. And they said, no, we're not going to. You know why we're not broadcasting the opening ceremony or streaming it live? It's too complex for the online audience. It's too difficult. This is the quote. NBC says, they told the LA Times, the ceremonies are, quote, complex entertainment spectacles that do not translate well online because they require context, which our award-winning production team will provide for the large primetime audiences that gather together to watch them.
See, the web is better at context than TV ever will be, I think.
If you watch it with a Twitter feed, you'll know more about what's going on
absolutely.
Than Matt Lauer and Meredith Vieira, who said, who the hell is Tim Berners-Lee and what is he doing there? They literally, and they made a, they, it was almost as if they were celebrating their ignorance. Meredith Vieira says, this is the cringe moment for me because, you know, they had these LCD screens on the seats, which is cool. So they, even though people are sitting in the seats, they still can do display in the seats like they did in China at Beijing. It was beautiful. She said there are 70,000 LCD panels on these seats. I have no idea what that means. And it's like, does it not seem a little bit retro to say, oh, technology, I don't get it? Everybody gets it now, Meredith. It's no longer cool to admit that you're an ignorant of technology. I understand they don't know who Tim Berners-Lee is. I wouldn't expect that.
I guess so, although you would think they might have been pre-briefed if they were so important to us understanding what was going on.
Even if you don't know who Tim Berners-Lee is, Danny Boyle decided to put him like in the middle of the Olympic opening ceremony.
Which so I thought was great.
No, that is great. But if you don't know who he is, maybe you're kind of quiet about it. Maybe you go, and there's Tim Berners-Lee.
Yeah. I mean, no, but
you don't know.
I was thinking, okay, I know Tim Berners-Lee, Sir Tim Berners-Lee is the man who invented the World Wide Web. You can't put one person, you know, and say this person invented the internet. There's too many people involved. But you can say one person invented the World Wide Web, and it's this guy, and he's British, And he's sitting there with the next cube, which I would have loved if they had said, oh, and Sir Tim is typing on the original next cube computer that he invented the World Wide Web on. And he's going to tweet. They didn't even understand that he was tweeting, that he's now going to tweet a message to the world via his cube. They didn't say any of that. They said, well, we don't know who he is. Look, they said, Google him. This was what is too complex. Holy cow. The trending hashtag was shut up, Matt Lauer on Twitter. Is NBC at fault, or is this just the way the Olympics is? It's so expensive. NBC spent, I don't know what they spent, must have spent millions and millions of dollars for the rights to broadcast this.
So much about the Olympics is sort of dominated by the expense, like the fact they're going around to pubs in the UK and telling them they have to be careful about using words like London and summer in 2012 on their little chalkboard signs.
Because it's illegal. The IOC will sue you.
Because it might tick off the beers that are sponsoring or McDonald's or whoever.
Unbelievable.
Well, to play kind of devil's advocate.
Please do. I'm waiting for a sensible person.
As the old media guy, I think NBC probably should have shown the opening ceremonies when it happened.
Yes.
And probably should have done the stupid commentator thing, the kind of the clueless commentator thing, and then repeated it for prime time.
I would have done it the other way. I would have said, let's do an unedited, because by the way, they cut parts out. So they could put more commercials in. But let's do an unedited live stream without commentary. So people, there's still plenty of people who are going to watch on primetime television, going to want Matt and Meredith. They're going to want the commercials.
Or watch it with just the Twitter stream on the screen. Let the Twitter stream.
Wouldn't that be great?
Let it be the commentary. But the problem is that NBC and other big media companies have to serve two constituencies. They have to serve the people who have Twitter accounts and Facebook accounts and who are kind of active media users. And then they also have a huge audience there are people who are completely unaware that this controversy was going on until it showed up in television news stories or in their newspapers or, you know, in some other form, the traditional media that they follow. And those are the ones who gave NBC huge ratings that evening.
Oh, I watched because I had to.
You watched it. But also, I think the complaints about what was happening during the day and people not being able to see it drove a bigger audience to NBC. So imagine what would have happened if you had had, say, that live stream and people tweeting about it.
Right.
And they told their friends, oh, you'll see this evening.
Right.
And then they had done it. You probably would have had even a bigger audience. So NBC hopefully will learn something from this, and this is probably the last Olympics where we'll see anything like this.
That's what I'm thinking. 4 years from now.
Hope so.
Well, here's the other thing, is that you might say, well, this is media, has to do it this way. But the BBC is basically doing everything live online without commentary. They're doing it all.
It's also happening in real time and in prime time for them.
Yeah.
So it's a different time frame, you know, the prime time and also the structure.
But that's the point. The internet lets you do this live. And so people who care that much can watch. And everybody who wants to go home after work and watch it can do that. You know, they don't have to watch live. They can watch the Kate and Matt version or whatever.
You can tell that NBC partly gets it because they have made available all of this live stream content. Although, you know, there were still moments like there are some things that they're not showing and are delaying off of the live stream. And so they kind of get it. They kind of know what they need to do, but they're just not quite there yet. You know, it's like it's a love affair and they're not giving it all. You know, you don't get anything real in a relationship until you give all. And so it's a very unsatisfying relationship right now for NBC and its online audience.
So wait, are we not just under the impression that this was about making sure that they got the ad dollars or the worth of the ad dollars for the advertisers? I mean, like Apple paid who knows how much for their opening ceremonies ads, and everybody else paid who knows how much for their opening ceremonies ads. And if I could have watched it 5 hours earlier, or if I could have watched the non-idiot-proofed feed someplace else, then I wouldn't have seen the Apple ad, right?
True.
I mean, how else are they going to get everybody to watch one thing at one time? I mean, the only way to do that, it seems to me, is to make sure that they can't watch it anyplace else.
Well, then you should say that. You shouldn't say it's too complex.
Right.
You should say, no, sorry, you have to watch the ads.
Right. Yeah, they're not going to say
that. Robert Scoble said, I'm going to TiVo and punish them by skipping the ads.
So here's a question. Suppose that they had done two broadcasts. Suppose they had done a live daytime when it happened broadcast and then had
I wouldn't do it as a broadcast. I'd take advantage of the internet. Do it on the internet only.
Do it on the internet.
Yeah.
But you still drive interest
exactly.
in it. From social media drives people to say, you need to see this tonight
exactly.
if you missed it.
I think that you would get more viewers, right? You'd make more money.
Yep.
So Gizmodo has a good article, How to Watch Every Second of the Olympics, which tells you how to basically get around the restrictions NBC's placing on it. But at the beginning, Brent Rose writes, in 1996, 176 and a half hours of the Olympics were broadcast. Not the internet, obviously. Broadcast in 96. This year, between broadcast and internet, NBC is going to put 5,535 hours of Olympics online. So you got to give them credit. They are doing that. I do give them credit for that. I think it's really annoying, and I think it's only because Comcast owns NBC that they're saying, oh, by the way, you have to have a cable or satellite or you have to have an account and have to be paying for MSNBC or CNBC or you cannot watch online. And then so what people are doing is what Gizmodo is telling them how to do, which is use a proxy and watch it on the BBC. That seems like a bad – it's probably illegal and probably doesn't work so well either. But and there are pirated streams.
Yes, there's a lot of them out there.
So in 4 years, this is one thing that makes the Olympics and presidential elections, by the way, very interesting from an internet point of view, technology point of view. 4 years is a long time. So what do we predict will happen 4 years hence?
Well, you've actually got 2 years for the next Olympics because you got the Winter Olympics.
Winter Olympics aren't Olympics. That's just a bunch of people
in snow. Oh, are you kidding
me?
4 years ago, streaming almost exists.
You belong in Buffalo.
I may
I'm just teasing. Of course the Winter Olympics are. But the Summer Olympics, let's just, because for argument's sake, because it's 4 years.
All right.
You could say you want to talk about the Winter Olympics for 2 years. That's
just saying. I mean, you've got a smaller window now to turn that around. You're right. It used to be every 4 years, and now it's every two.
That's
but
right.
Maybe people don't care as much about hockey.
I do. I like hockey.
They should.
But there's actually some great Winter Olympics events. Skiing is great. There's nothing like curling. I didn't say it was great.
I love curling.
There's nothing like
it. No, I love curling. And it's got that great Jonathan Colton song too.
But you ain't got beach volleyball, and I think if you don't have beach volleyball, you ain't got nothing.
All right. Snow volleyball. That's what we need.
NBC says anything that has a camera on it, we will at least stream, if not broadcast. But I have to think. Well, for instance, the opening ceremonies, which were admittedly bizarre, but fun to watch, they cut out a whole section so that. What's his name? The guy from
Ryan Seacrest
could interview Michael Phelps. Like, that's not going to happen later anyway. Why would you do that?
I mean, you're never going to get them to be as honest as you want them to be, though, right? I mean, if we assume that the reason they didn't put the opening ceremonies any place except in primetime is because they wanted the advertisers. Right. They said that they didn't show the 7-7 tribute. Which was, I mean, for people who missed it and who haven't heard the stories, they part of the opening ceremonies were a tribute to the people who died in the bomb blast on July 7th of 2005, just a few hours after London was announced as the location for the 2012 Olympics.
That's pretty tasteless to cut that.
Well, it wasn't geared towards an American audience, is the quote that I heard. And, of course, it's not geared towards an American audience. And how many things do we, like,
you think Kenneth Branagh looking like Abe Lincoln was geared to any audience at all? I kept saying, why is Abe Lincoln? I don't understand what Abe Lincoln is doing there. And he's holding a book and he's going, smiling. He's like, yes, I freed the slave. What is he doing there?
I think the Olympics arguably would be better off without the opening ceremonies, period.
I loved them, though. It was kitschy. It was fun. Didn't you love it when they forge rings?
That was beautiful.
And then they lift them in the air. The smokestacks, the glass. I thought this was kind of an interesting. Vanity Fair has about the funniest review of these. If you ever want to read something, a hoot. It's Vanity Fair Online. The funniest review I've ever read of these Olympic ceremonies.
The part that I liked least was the part that was supposed to be dedicated to the digital age, but maybe that's just what it looks like, too.
No, they say it was incomprehensible. It's like, wait a minute. And by the way, fake Facebook, that's not Facebook, but it's Facebook-like.
Right.
The Vanity Fair reviewer called it Olympics Facebook. And then so they found they're meeting, and then for some reason the Beatles march in, and then it was great. And they tweeted. But it was fake Twitter. But I think the best part from a tech point of view was Tim Berners-Lee sitting in his next cube saying, this is for everyone. I like that.
Tim Berners-Lee can do no wrong.
I thought that was a really neat moment. All right, going to move along. Because I'm whiny. I'm just whiny. I'm being whiny. There's no reason. But oh, let's just check the Twitter and see what NBC Delayed has. Breaking news. Michael Jordan and the Dream Team win gold medal in victory over Croatia. Mark Spitz wins a gold medal in the freestyle. It's exciting. Wow. This is the NBC Delayed Twitter feed. It's pretty funny. Proof our tape-delayed broadcasting model is working. Over 3,000 new Twitter followers in an hour. NBC Delayed, if you want to follow them. Let's make it 20,000 right now. By the way, and as you pointed out, ratings very, very good. So everybody, it worked. Let's talk Mountain Lion. This week, Apple released OS 10.8, which I'm presuming is the ninth version of OS 10, Mountain Lion. $20 via the App Store only, mostly only for Macs of the last couple of years. I'm sure Mac OS Ken Ray, you were covering this pretty heavily. What is, first of all, I guess the first question is, have there been any howls of pain?
I haven't heard any.
I haven't either.
I mean, it seems like it actually went very well. The biggest complaint anybody had was that it took too long to download, but that's because everybody was downloading it.
Right.
So that's not bad. And then who was it? Chitika said that the Macs that they track, it's already up to close to 3% of Macs online.
Isn't that amazing?
Running Mountain Lion. It's crazy. I'd like to know a little bit more about, you know, how many Macs they track and how they do that. But, I mean, that they have an appreciable amount that they can say within 24 hours, wow, look at that blip.
I think it's
fascinating.
You talk to Mac users all the time on your podcast. I would think that you tell me, but I would get most Mac users upgrade every time there's a new version. I mean, it's just kind of a yearly event. It's only $20 for every machine.
Well, it's starting to be. I mean, honestly, I didn't do it until today because I was holding off. I had a couple of things that had to happen. Well, I had a couple of things happen at the end of the week. And then it was also holding off to make sure that a couple of productivity apps that I use regularly were ready. Although there's a great site, roaringapps.com.
Yeah.
Is excellent about keeping track of. I haven't found an app that I needed to know about that they didn't have listed. And they show you whether it's working perfectly, you know, kind of working with a couple of kinks and not working at all.
I'll tell you,
that's a good thing to check out.
One annoyance that I had, I bought one of the Retina display Macs. So I, in theory, get a free upgrade. So there was an Apple up-to-date page. As soon as it went live on Wednesday, I went there, filled out the form. Apple did not email me for 2 days.
Hmm.
So on Friday, I got my thank you for participating, the content code, blah, 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 on Friday. But of course, I couldn't wait 3 days to download this. I paid the $20.
You would think you would get it within nanoseconds of applying for it.
Maybe it's me, but it seems
maybe there's a guy there doing the paperwork.
Well, there was a problem with it all week, right? They actually, the up-to-date program went live on Monday, I think it was. And so people...
By accident, kind of.
Right. And so people went ahead and sent in. And then when the up-to-date program actually went live, the people who had signed up for it at first, I think there was a bit of a delay for them. And then some people who were getting it were actually getting the server, Mountain Lion server, up-to-date rather than just, you know, the regular Mountain Lion OS.
I'm hearing from a lot of people who just got their email. Dan in our chat mod said that he sent a support in an email saying, hey, I had to buy it because I needed it. He's in IT. And they gave him a refund. So I guess I'll have to maybe apply for a refund. But maybe it's cynical of me, but it seems like it's a little convenient that they wait a couple of days. Let's just wait a couple. Maybe you pay for it. Let's wait a couple of days.
Well, Leo, I've gotten receipts from buying things on iTunes and the App Store 2 days later.
No, I'll tell you why that happened.
So that happened.
Oh, no, yeah. There's a reason for that. Mm-hmm. Because it's a credit card charge, and what they want to do is aggregate more than one if they can. If they did it for every charge, it costs them more. So they want to get as much together. So that's true. That's always been the case. Mm. iTunes receipts will come every few days. But when you buy something at the Apple Store, as an example, you get your receipt before you get home.
Yeah, or in the store sometimes. And
often
on your phone.
Yeah, often instantly. So, yeah. I mean, email is instant. I don't understand why it takes a couple of days.
Well, you know, you mentioned that it's mostly for newer Macs, but I've got a mid-2007 iMac That's what I'm using right now, and I was able to install it without a problem on that. That's the latest. That's the oldest iMac that will go on, and I have a mid-2009 MacBook Pro, but I had problems installing it on the MacBook Pro. When it installed, I kept getting this error message saying that the file was corrupted or couldn't be verified, and to re-download it, which I did three times. It turns out that for some odd reason, it was saving to the disk with incorrect permissions. Oh. So I had to go in and manually set the permissions on the file to allow read-write, and then it would work. And then it installed fine. But I'm using it on a five-year-old Mac, and it's great.
Awesome.
It's not,
Is it faster?
It's not faster, but it didn't slow it down. Initially, it was running a little slow, but that's because the Spotlight indexer runs when you first install it. But now it's just like butter. It's as good as I mean, I've not had a performance hit on this five-year-old Mac with any of these OS X updates. Each one has just it's continued to be very fast for a mid-2007 iMac.
Pretty happy with the update. The big changes, and I too have installed a number of machines. By the way, little pro tip, instead of downloading the almost 5 gigabyte file on every single machine, I looked at my Comcast. I'm at 248 of the 250 gigs I'm allowed, and I've got another week left. So it's a good thing I didn't do this. I downloaded it on one machine. You'll get, don't install it because it erases the install file as soon as you've installed it, which I think is kind of Apple's shouldn't be doing that. I don't know why they're doing that, but they do to save space, I guess. But before you install it, open up, you can right-click or control-click on the file, the install OS X Mountain Lion file, and browse through the contents of the package, and you'll find a file, about a 4.7 gig file called installesd.dmg. That's actually the installer. You can copy that out, and I did. I put it on a USB key, and then you move around from machine to machine. And that's the installer, so that you can get the installer out of there, but you have to do it before you run the install because it deletes it at the end of the install.
There's also a very cool Apple script called Lion Distmaker that will create, if you don't delete that, will create either a USB key or a DVD installer. You just run the disk and it extracts everything for you and creates it.
It's a simple thing if you've used Disk Utility to make a bootable USB key. I just didn't want to waste, because it's a 4.7 gig USB key. I didn't want to waste the space. I guess you could put other stuff on it later, but it's going to erase the key. Anyway, that's handy. So big differences. The most notable one is there is now a notification center over on the right that will tell you. And it's, right now, it's mostly Apple programs that work, although Sparrow and Chrome both will do notifications. I noticed in Chrome you can turn on website notifications, which is kind of interesting. You'll get calendar reminders, birthday reminders. You'll get email notes, that kind of thing. So this is very much like iOS, the notification center in iOS, but is now part of OS X. Another big change that's a little bit more under the hood, but you might notice right away, is Gatekeeper, which is a security change to OS X. And it's kind of interesting. What it does, if it's in the security and privacy system preference pane. Is that where it is?
Yeah.
Under general. It changes the way applications are installed on OS X. I think this isn't a bad idea, but it might bite some people. There are three different settings. The most insecure is the one you've been using, which is you can download and install apps from anywhere. The new default is you can download and install apps only from the Mac App Store or developers who have applied for and received a certificate from Apple proving their identity, which is also a good way to protect you because bad guys generally don't do that. And then the highest security setting, which has to be manually set, is Mac App Store only. You know, if you have kids or relatives who don't understand computers, that might be a good setting. But it bit me immediately. It's funny because I'm used to downloading apps all the time. And you download an app, and then when you try to run it, it says, sorry, you can't run it.
Yeah, it's going to bite everybody for a while because not everybody has the certificates.
Good. They do tell you, which I like. Yeah, most developers don't. They do tell you, Apple tells you, when you do try to run an app you downloaded, all you have to do is right-click or control-click on the app and select open, and it will then open it for one time only, even if it's an unprotected third party.
I didn't know that because, yeah.
Yeah, and that's handy. Because normally what you would do is say, well, I'm going to change that setting. And you don't really want to do that, I think, normally. to reduce the security. Interesting. Go ahead.
Am I right that this was the first time that all of the updates, or when you check for updates, it's automatically going through the Mac App Store as well?
Yes.
Because when I ran it.
Third change. Big change. Go ahead. You tell us. No, it's a huge change.
No, that was it. I mean, when I ran it, I was having a little trouble figuring out whether my computer, which is an early, I think it's February 2011, MacBook Pro, I had heard conflicting reports on whether or not the AirPlay mirroring was going to work. So I went immediately to see if there was an update for that, because I know there were a couple of updates this week to make AirPlay mirroring work for a couple of other computers. And it turns out it actually worked. It was just I was being an idiot and couldn't figure it out. But there are a couple of voices that I've downloaded, and it immediately opened up the Mac App Store.
Isn't that weird?
I was confused, actually. I thought I had accidentally clicked on something else, and I went back to System Preferences and hit it all again. And then, you know, the second time it showed me the Mac App Store, I was like, oh, okay, so we're finally going to start doing that.
So if you go, as Apple users who want to do, under the Apple to software update, what would normally launch a system preference pane called software update actually launches the App Store. And you might say, well, no, that's a mistake. But in fact, now all updates for the system are coming through the App Store. Interesting article. I don't know if you read this, from Marco Arment, the guy who wrote Instapaper. And he's saying the Mac App Store's future of irrelevance. He's pointing out that Postbox, which is a fairly well-known mail application, has pulled out of the Mac App Store. And he says a lot of developers are pulling out because of things like there's no paid upgrades. Sandboxing is required. So in order to be compatible with sandboxing, you may have to remove some features. There's no demo versions available. It's just some significant restrictions in the App Store that developers are increasingly upset with. And this is what I thought was interesting. Marco points out, as many of us who use the Mac App Store and use Macs have always said, which is the Mac App Store is so great, I'm actually buying apps a second time unnecessarily just because I want the updates, because of the convenience, because I can install them on my machines. He says, in the first year of Mac App Store before sandboxing, I bought as much as I could from it. As a customer, the convenience was so great, I even repurchased a few apps I already owned. But now I've lost all confidence that the apps I buy in the App Store today will still be there next month or next year. The advantages of buying from the App Store are mostly gone now. He's concerned, I think, and as others are, that the App Store, by being so restrictive, is going to end up not being the go-to place for Mac apps.
There is some stuff that works fine on iOS, which is more of a challenge on the Mac. Like, for instance, issues with demo apps on iOS are not as big a deal, because if something is 99 cents,
big deal, right?
Just buy it, and no tragedy if you don't like it. And Mac apps are not like that. You know, they still cost quite a bit more, and you're probably going to be much more interested in trying them before you buy them. I'm very curious also what this means for Windows 8, because at least with the Mac, you have a choice between the Mac App Store and buying stuff the old way. And Microsoft is saying that for Windows 8 Metro apps, you know, it'll only go through the
App
Windows
Store. Only.
And so you're really hosed if that doesn't do what developers need.
That means if you're buying on the Windows RT, their tablet, you'll be buying through an App Store only. But that's kind of like iOS.
Yeah, it is.
On the desktop, you still have desktop apps, right?
You can buy old desktop apps the old way. And to be fair, I think Microsoft is attempting to learn from some of Apple's mistakes, and it's not that they have exactly the same rules.
There's an advantage to being a little behind. You can watch where the arrows are in the guy ahead of you's back, and you avoid those
Thought Apple would more quickly add more of these features developers want to make it easier to sell stuff. And for the most part, they haven't. I don't know whether that's because they don't want to or whether it's just not all that high on their priority list.
Go ahead, Ken.
I'm just wondering, I mean, it's an interesting thing what Marco is saying, and unfortunately I haven't read the article.
Yeah, it's not in our rundown. I'm sorry.
That's quite right. Yeah. From what you're telling me, though, I mean, it seems like there are two. I mean, people complain about the things like the Mac App Store or the iOS App Store. People used to complain about the iOS App Store, about how curated everything was. But I think we've sort of gotten on board on iOS that's really just for the general consumer. And so we're kind of okay with some of the restrictions there, or we've gotten used to it.
Right.
It's the whole car truck thing that Jobs talked about. I mean, are we trying to kid proof? And I don't mean kid proof, but I mean, are we trying to kid proof the computer operating experience as well for all the people who are coming in for the first time?
Stupid proof it.
Yeah, stupid proof it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or
Well, isn't that where we're moving? I mean, one of the things about Mountain Lion is more and more like iOS. Windows 8 is a perfect example. More and more like a tablet OS. I think we are moving in that direction. And I, you know, unfortunately, those of us here and those people who watch the show are exactly the wrong. You know, these are we're the ones who want power, and are willing to sacrifice ease of use for power.
I think Apple sort of got it right with Mountain Lion. You can do.
You get a choice.
This middle road.
Yeah.
Or you can go the old way and do whatever you want, or you can go super conservative, and the default is not super conservative.
It's right in the middle.
And the one that's most Apple-centric, it's in the middle. And as long as that's not a step towards a more restrictive future, I think it's just fine.
It's almost like it's a setting for the people who actually would be fine with an iPad but don't realize yet that they would be fine with an iPad. So they're still buying a computer, but it's going to go ahead and funnel them to a place where they're not going to be able to screw themselves or their computer up.
Right.
And with Windows 8, Microsoft already is taking so many risks from the interface to the approach to the way it works and the way documents work on it, that to say that we're only going to allow you to get these Metro apps through our store may keep developers from developing Metro apps, or they'll develop apps for both sides, and you'll be able to get, you know, do much more with the traditional Windows style apps, and those will continue to be much more favorable to consumers. I think it's Microsoft, I think, has a lot more to lose with the way it's doing its model than the way Apple is.
Yeah, I mean, think about the way the iOS App Store started, right? We had a year without it. And certainly there were jailbreaks and there were apps that people could install that way. But we had a year of like sort of chomping at the bit and saying, well, this is a great thing, but I wish it could do more. So then when they opened up their App Store, there wasn't like but I want to be able to get the app someplace else from most people. Most people were like, hey, look, Super Monkey Fun Ball or whatever, you know, one of the first. Like,
that was the first one. You're right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I can't remember what it was called. That's what I always call it. But so Microsoft's looking at that and saying, well, that's what Apple did. But it's not exactly what Apple did. What Apple did was gave you something that basically had 12 things that it could do. And it did them really beautifully. And then you really couldn't do anything else with it. And so then when they opened up their App Store, people weren't grousing about not being able to get stuff anyplace else for the most part. People are saying, look at all the new stuff that I can do. And so for Microsoft to start with that, you're right. I mean, that does seem like they're sort of putting themselves behind the eight ball, or between a rock and a hard place, or between the Scylla and Charybdis. Take your pick.
Ooh, Scylla and Charybdis. Wow.
Thank you. Yeah, well, that's the police, too.
Time either the mast. So I guess this is going to be fun. I mean, for tech journalists love this because we're going to have a very fun time this fall. Microsoft, I think, slipped the date for Windows 8. Did they not? It's going to be
October 26th.
October 26th. So we know when it'll come out.
And I guess I think Surface will come out then as well.
Right, because they said when general availability of Windows 8, that's when Surface Pro. No.
Oh, no.
Windows RT.
Surface for Windows RT.
And then 3 months later, Pro will come out, which is a Windows 8 tablet. Why so long? Because, you know, they're ready, almost the final bits, supposedly they're ready to manufacture. RTM version of Windows 8 is like days away.
Yeah, it always takes a while. And I guess,
I understood when they had to print CDs, but they're not doing that anymore.
I think Toshiba and Dell and Lenovo and everybody still need to sort of prep their machines. And and they're all working on, you know, machines which haven't even been announced yet for Windows 8. And they need to make sure they work. And remember, with Windows Vista, one of the main reasons the experience was so bad with Vista out of the gate was that the companies that make the hardware did not have enough time to check their drivers, and so they had a miserable experience based on that. So I think having a window for verifying the stuff works is actually smart.
You write, Dwight, in your tech blog about Microsoft finally kind of acknowledging that the Surface is going to piss off the OEMs.
Yeah, when journalists have asked the executives at Microsoft, exactly what how their hardware partners are reacting to it, they kind of smile and wave.
Oh, they're fine. Not a problem. Fine. No problems.
Right. Yeah. But in their SEC documents, they said under the first item under the risks for this quarter are that the OEMs may not be very pleased that they're doing this and could cause disruption in the relationship with the partners. And certainly there were some I believe Acer was not happy and publicly stated
right.
So. And Microsoft didn't even tell its partners it was doing this until, you know, a day or two before the announcement of the Surface. And there was a reason for that. They didn't want these guys complaining before the event. And I think that there were all these huge risks that Microsoft is taking with Windows 8, and this is just one of them. Gabe Newell, who is who's the CEO and co-founder of Valve, used to work at Microsoft, thinks Windows 8 is going to be a catastrophe for the Windows ecosystem, and he's trying to double down on Linux as a
stopgap. Oh yeah, come on, really?
Yeah, right. Hey, it's the year of the Linux desktop.
It is the year of the Linux desktop. Finally.
Well, this is kind of amazing. We're talking about. I'm sorry. Forgive me.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Ken.
Well, no, it was just a joke. I'm sorry. We're talking about the possibility of a tech bubble returning, and we're talking about the year of the Linux desktop. It's like somebody has set the Wayback Machine on all of this without telling.
Who else? Somebody else went along with Gabe Newell. Some another game guy said, "Yeah, Windows 8 doesn't look good. We're not thrilled about it either."
Well, and on the desktops, on the traditional Windows desktop side, and I've seen some white papers and some discussion of this. The drivers on
Blizzard.
That side are actually they're nicer, and there's the new version of DirectX, which gives new capabilities. So I think for that side, it's fine. I think that probably the Metro area, except maybe for casual gaming, will get completely ignored by the game community. And I also think that Windows 7 is going to be around as long as Windows XP was as a result of this. I think Windows 7
absolutely.
Is the new XP.
Absolutely. Rob Pardo at Blizzard. Thanks to Cheeto in our chat room. I've got his tweet here. Nice interview with Gabe Newell. He says he concurs, basically. It's not awesome for Blizzard either. By the way, this is the new way of communicating with press and users. Tweet it.
Absolutely.
Not awesome for Blizzard either, says Rob Pardo. Why not? I mean, you said it's got a new DirectX. Those games will be easier to install, easier to use. Don't they do well on... Well, Blizzard never been a console game company, but that's one of the reasons people buy Xboxes, because it's so easy. Won't this just be like that? It'll just work.
Well, there is one interesting thing is there is a lot of integration with the Xbox ecosystem in Windows 8.
Right.
You know, there's actually, so there may be, there may be some of that. It could be Microsoft is really wanting to push people towards the Xbox as their primary gaming platform. There has long been this mantra of PC gaming is dead. I don't know that I agree with that, but certainly that.
Oh, no. In fact, it's never been more alive, if you ask me.
Right. And so, I'm not quite sure what it is they're talking about, other than perhaps the notion that there is a lot of people are not going to want to go anywhere near Windows 8 just because of the changes
right.
in it.
Right.
And so they're going to end up being stuck with Windows 7 technologies for a while, just as they still have to accommodate Windows XP technologies.
Who was it we were talking to now? I can't remember. Oh, it was Nolan Bushnell, the founder of Atari, who said, because consoles have not been updated, you know, they're getting very long in the tooth. I know we're going to get a new Xbox next year, but he said he believes that console gaming has been stalled in the water. You haven't seen much improvement. It's just, you know, Call of Duty 23, and that PC gaming is where all of the innovation is happening.
An awful lot has changed since those consoles came out.
Yeah.
It was a different era.
Yeah. You can't. Somebody was telling me, I didn't realize this, you can't even multitask on the Xbox. You can only, even though it's got three PC power PC processors, it can only do one thing at a time.
Okay, I have two questions based on what you guys were just talking about. First of all, is the Surface possibly the Windows RT version, the one that's coming out at the end of October? If it comes out at a low enough cost, I mean, is that sort of like a, I don't want to say a gateway drug, but I mean, does that maybe calm people down a little bit? If they're able to get that in their hands and see...
Price is everything. We saw a fake blog post from Sweden saying it was going to be $1,000, and everybody flipped their lids, and it turns out that was just a dummy price that nobody really meant to be public. It's got to be. It's got to be iPad or less, right?
They more or less said that.
Even the iPad can't be the iPad anymore. Correct. With the $200 Nexus 7. You better be a few hundred bucks.
And the starting price for the iPad might, by the time October 26th rolls around, there might be a $200 iPad.
I would hate to be in this market, to be honest. I mean, you're just getting crushed on the margins, aren't you?
I mean, basically, with Windows 8 in general, I think we are going to have no clue this year whether it's a good idea for Microsoft or the world in general. We might not even know next year. It really is sort of trying to build a Windows for the next 5 to 10 years, and it's going to take a while before it's clear what's going on.
I want to take a little break. We are talking about Windows 8. We got a new iPhone picture. I don't know if it's true or not, but we'll take a look at it. And a lot more to go, but Dwight Silverman's here from the Houston Chronicle, Harry McCracken from Time Magazine and the Technologizer, Mac OS Ken Ray from macosken.com. We're talking about tech, but first, before we go any further, let's see. Tom Merritt is in our TNT newsroom. What's coming up in the week ahead, Tom?
Hey, thanks, Leo. Here's a look at some of the things we'll be keeping an eye on in the week ahead. Monday, July 30th, that Apple-Samsung mother-of-all patent trials kicks off in U.S. federal court in San Jose. Tuesday, July 31st is the last day for iWork.com. If you're interested, it's going away that day. Wednesday, August 1st, we get earnings from Yelp. Thursday, August 2nd, earnings from LinkedIn. And Friday, August 3rd, Dragon Naturally Speaking 12 comes out for $100. And the Crunch Up and August Capital Party 2012 happens. All that and more coming up this week on Tech News Today. Back to you, Leah.
Previously on Twit.
Nice.
Security Now.
Secure against rubber hose.
Oh, dear.
Attacks.
Mac Break Weekly, coming from Boston, Greece, and Northern California. Stand by. Here comes a link. Fire up Chirp, because here's our link of the week. Gizwiz.
All right, so we're going to set the bar for the new show.
Yeah. That's the bar.
The bar is set.
Let's jump over it.
Okay, Ozzy, you can jump over the bar.
This week in Enterprise Tech.
Be very, very quiet. I'm hunting Wi-Fi aways.
Welcome to i5 for the iPhone. This is the show for us, the iPhone fans.
Windows Weekly. There's a new lobbying group in town. And this time, he means business. Charles Bronson is the lobbyist.
The lobbyist.
Before you buy.
If Google comes around and adds more capability to the Nexus Q, I'd revisit my statement. But at this point, I cannot recommend that you buy the Nexus Q.
The problem is it is nobody's going to buy two because nobody's going to buy one. However, I bet you'll be able to buy them for $20 on eBay in about 3 months. This Week in Tech.
I think your staff quit the other day, the whole company.
That was disgusting. If you missed this week on Twit, you missed a lot. We're still cleaning up the table after that spit take. It's a little, if you find a little moisture there, that's just. By the way, TNT, Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. Pacific. It's a new time, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern time, 1700 UTC, Monday through Friday on twit.tv. I don't even know if it's worth mentioning. I guess I will. New pictures. 9 to 5 Mac has new pictures of the new iPhone. Now, I believe, Ken, again, I'm going to defer to you as the Mac expert, that it's not unusual for Apple to have multiple prototypes, maybe not at this stage. This clearly is something, but is it the next iPhone or a next iPhone?
I pass. can I do that?
Yeah,
it was interesting to see in the Samsung Apple documents that came out earlier this week. They said some of the things that they showed were a two-tone prototype of the iPhone before we had an iPhone.
Right. And did you see the original iPad from like 8 years ago?
I did see that.
That was wonderful.
That was the one without the kickstand, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that was another story. Was that a patent application or there was an actual prototype of an iPad with a kickstand?
Those were prototypes.
That was out of the lawsuit documents.
That's from the lawsuit documents. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Right. So, I don't know. I mean, I got on board with the whole larger screen thing. The like longer, skinnier iPhone. Right. And then I kind of got on board with the, well, it's going to have the metal back. And then I got on board with the two-tone. So here's, I mean, I think we're fairly certain there's going to be a new iPhone.
That's about all we know. Come on, let's admit it.
And then I'm cool after that. I mean, you know, obviously when they talk about the product transition and they're trying not to say that it's going to be a new iPhone, but then they're perfectly willing to talk about all the talk about a new iPhone right. is, you know, killing sales for this quarter. Although I read a really interesting piece, Walter Piecyk, and this is actually sort of borne up in the AT&T stuff. Walter Piecyk said, yeah, the problem isn't that people are waiting for the next iPhone. The problem is AT&T and Verizon and everybody have lengthened their upgrade cycles. He said in one of his notes, and I can't remember where it was, might have been Business Insider. He said in a note that he sent to investors or to clients or to whoever he sends notes to, his mom, his fifth grade girlfriend, maybe. he said in the notes that he sent that he thinks that AT&T probably would have sold just as many iPhones. They would have actually beaten sequentially if they hadn't lengthened the upgrade cycle. And he's probably, I mean, maybe he's right. And AT&T doesn't care. AT&T actually said in their earnings notes, that yes, part of the way that they were able to keep costs down was by lengthening the amount of time that people have to wait for another iPhone. Hmm. So I'm sorry, I just went like four different places there. I apologize.
No, I think it's interesting. And in fact, you know, Samsung, both Apple and Samsung had their quarterly earnings calls this week. Apple sold 26 million iPhones in the quarter past. Samsung almost double that. Now, that's including a variety of phones, not just the Galaxy S3. But I wonder if I know all the analysts, everybody's saying the iPhone 5 or whatever they call it, it's going to be the next big thing. It's going to be huge. It's going to sell better than any iPhone previous. There's pent-up demand. People have been waiting for years for this. The fact that Apple had to say we took a little hit this quarter because we didn't sell as many because everybody knows there's a new one coming. I think despite all that, I think it's a more competitive environment than it has been in the past. And I just think that Apple is not an automatic. Maybe it is. Is it?
It is more competitive, but the competition is between Apple and Samsung.
Right.
Basically, everybody else is not doing that hot.
HTC's barely surviving.
Obviously, the Galaxy line is the other sort of signature, well-known, big brand of phone.
Because it looks just like an iPhone.
The new one doesn't so much.
I don't know. It looks like what they think the next iPhone might look like.
Oh, you know, see, it's taller, are you carrying that? Is that your daily driver, like, Dwight?
Yeah. At the moment, I'm using this a lot, and I'm a big iPhone fan. I really like it, and I've had one since the 3G. But this is a sweet smartphone.
It's very nice,
and I could see myself carrying one of these. And I'm going to be looking as a consumer. I'm going to be looking really carefully at what Apple does. It's got to be at least this nice in order
for me to
want to jump.
Apple's running some risks because they're apparently changing the connector, if these pictures are to be believed. We've talked about this before.
And supposedly they'll offer an adapter that better be in the box, I think, on the first one.
And it better fit so seamlessly and nicely that I can continue to use all of those docks that I have because I've got a ton of them.
Yes. But, you know, if indeed the next iPhone looks like that prototype that you mm-hmm. showed, mm-hmm. that's boring.
It is.
That's boring. That's not what I want to see from Apple. I want to see something really new and different and exciting. And it's at least this thin, you know, and at least with a screen that's at least as nice as that. I don't think it has to be that big because there's a problem with big screens and your thumb, you know. But it needs to be bigger than what it is, and it needs to be nicer than
Apple might have lost its mojo. What do you say?
Well, what it needs more than anything else is LTE. I mean...
They're really behind in that regard.
If you have an iPhone with LTE, that's kind of all the excitement I want. That'll be such a big improvement as long as they can keep the battery life good.
Is LTE penetration for AT&T, Verizon, and Sprint sufficient? Well, not for Sprint so much, but for those two, sufficient to drive enough sales?
Well, for Verizon, definitely.
Yeah, because I don't have LTE here.
AT&T is still catching up.
Right.
But you don't want to buy a new phone.
Yeah, you're not going to buy a 3G
LTE.
Phone. Yeah, you're right.
That's so I think the big challenge for Apple is everybody else is willing to ship an LTE phone with terrible battery life. I think Apple will only do it if they can make a battery, which is huge. I mean, some of the rumors about the new iPhone is that the screen is thinner. My guess is they will take as much as possible of that extra space and make the battery larger.
Battery.
Even the connector being smaller might be so the battery can be larger. they really don't want to say that we have an LTE phone, but the battery life is 30% lower.
Yeah.
This might be a very interesting fall where two of the the biggest tech giants are potentially going to stumble, Windows 8 and iPhone 5.
I think it's always a mistake to bet that Apple is going to stumble.
So far it has been.
99 out of 100 times.
People on the other hand, nobody bats 1,000.
No.
Don't you have the whole lock-in that Piper Jaffray and Les Jean Munster keeps talking about, though? I mean, is it not secure enough? And there's also...
You mean because of app purchases, people have invested in apps?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Yeah, because of apps and because of video and things like that.
The apps are cheap enough. I don't think people really consider that.
Leo, I don't know.
That's
a big consideration. You know, I'm seriously thinking about...
Most Android apps are cheap or free.
I went through and totaled how much I've spent over time.
Yeah, but that's
apps.
A lot of work. Most people don't do that.
No, but you're aware of it subconsciously. I mean, if you've bought, for example, if you've bought each one of Apple's, pages and Keynote and numbers, if you bought each one of those for iOS, that's $30. And while each one of them at $9.99 isn't that much, I've spent $30 on productivity apps. Am I going to have to go and do that again for Android? So so the apps are a factor when you're thinking about making the leap, and I may end up doing it, but that is in the back of my mind an issue.
I'm not sure. I can't decide. Well, let me ask we got a good sample here. How many of you would consider moving to a different platform, Android to iPhone, iPhone to Android? If there were a better phone, and how can I phrase this? Regardless of the cost of apps, how important? I want to know how important the app.
If in order to do it, you had to repurchase all of the apps that you have now.
Would repurchasing the apps stop you? Yes. How many people wouldn't stop you? Most. I'm right. Thank you. You'll all get cookies at the end.
Wait a minute, though. Wait a minute.
Chat room. It kind of looks like it's evenly divided.
And the key, Leo, is that it's in the back of my mind when I'm looking.
It is in your mind. Oh. It's certainly one of the inertia elements. I'm not saying there isn't some inertia, but is it enough? It's a speed bump, but is it enough of a speed bump to say, "No, I guess I'll stay with the iPhone, even though it's not as cool anymore."
Right, and I'm also thinking about switching carriers because I'm with AT&T.
That's a bigger speed bump, I think.
Yes, and Verizon's LTE. I was on vacation for the last 2 weeks. I was in various parts of North Carolina and Missouri, South Carolina, and in very rural areas. And I was really amazed at where I could find Verizon AT&T
Verizon LTE,
yeah. And how often AT&T was no signal at all. And so I'm seriously considering jumping to Verizon, although I don't necessarily like their price structure and the shared data thing that they force you to do where AT&T gives you a choice. So there's an incredible number of factors if you're changing platforms and carriers to think about. And it'll be interesting to see what kind of churn you get with a new iPhone if it's LTE and AT&T and Sprint. And Verizon. Sprint's LTE, by the way, which is now available here in Houston, is very spotty and it's relatively slow. The other day on this Verizon Galaxy S3, I got 42 megabits down on Sprint on an HTC phone I have for Sprint here in Houston. The best I've done is about 6 megabits down on LTE.
I'm going to make a prediction. I think I think both Windows 8 and iPhone 5 are going to be surprising failures. I'm almost always wrong, by the way. I just want to say.
I was going to say, are you doing that so that people can say, oh, my God, and then run to their, respective Twitter accounts and say you wouldn't believe what Leo said?
Or yeah, really I think everybody should tweet 5? That. And if I – but see here, I've learned this from Dvorak. If I'm wrong, it's a big deal. If I'm right, people go, wow, he's an oracle. You only have to get one of these right every few years, right?
My guess is that the next iPhone, whatever it's called, will do just fine. And Windows 8 will just sort of be unclear for quite a while what's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll take a while. I mean, even
see, that's
Apple,
not interesting. It's like
I know, but that's
it's more interesting to say they're going to be horrible flops. I'll bet you a case of beer and a lobster. I think you're right, though, Harry.
We'll see.
You're being reasonable. I'm just saying it's not as interesting.
I just looked at all these other people who get suckered into the idea of predicting that Apple is going to fail.
Right.
And they do it on the web so people can go back and look at the fact that they predicted Apple would fail.
All I can say is thank God I don't buy tech stocks. I don't have any skin in this game at all, one way or the other. We're going to take a break. Good panel. Lots to talk about. We're going to talk a little more about phones, the Facebook phone, our next topic. But first, a word from our friends at FreshBooks, the best way to invoice. If you do invoicing, if you're in business, you know that sending out those invoices at the end of the month is just a pain. But you also know if you don't do it, you do not get paid. So wouldn't it be nice if there were a better, an easier, a faster way to do it? Yes, there is. It's called FreshBooks, the easy online invoicing app for small business. It'll save you time, and it gets you paid faster because right there on the invoice, there's a button that says pay them, and you can pay them. They have all these great online payment services, all, you know, that makes it very easy for your clients to pay you. It turns out they want to pay you. They really do. Sometimes it's just as much of a pain for them to go through the invoices and pay them as it was for you to send them. So let's get the friction out of this so you get paid faster, you get paid more easily. You could turn timesheets into invoices. They have an app for the iPhone. They also have a web app. It's great for tax time. You can run all sorts of reports to monitor your small business. Your accountant will just say, wow, this is great. I could do your taxes like that. Oh, and by the way, if they don't pay right away, automated late payment aligners for follow-up and so forth. They even will do physical invoices. They print and stamp them and mail them for you for a small fee. I love FreshBooks. When I discovered it, actually, it was Amber MacArthur who told me about it in 2004. It changed my life. I want it to change yours. Visit FreshBooks.com. You get a free 30-day trial. All the features of FreshBooks, completely unlimited use for 30 days when you visit FreshBooks.com. And if they ask, just, you know, tell them Leo sent you. You don't have to, but if you want to. FreshBooks. Really, seriously, I'm not kidding. You really want this thing. FreshBooks.com. Web 1901 has set up a straw poll. I don't know. I got to see what the question is. iPhone's ecosystem or Android's free apps? Pick one. It's at strawpoll.me/933. iPhone, Android. Hey, I like Windows Phone. BlackBerry fan here. I don't think there are many. I'm gonna vote for Android. Anyway, you can cast your vote. We'll see. The votes are coming in real time. Look at that. This is kind of cool. Real-time
voting. So this is in response to our question?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, somebody in the chat room set that up. It's strawpoll.me/933. We should do this more often. I didn't know it had this real-time thing. That's kind of cool. As they come in, you can watch people vote.
One BlackBerry fan so far.
iPhone's winning. 48 votes to 34 votes. 8 votes for Windows Phone. 1 BlackBerry fan. But this is good. This is still pretty close. You know, it's almost 50-50. Well, it's 53-39.
What's the number again, Leo?
933. No. Strawpoll.me/933. You know what? We're going to do this more often. That's really cool. I love it. I've seen it before, but I didn't know it had a real time. That's neat.
And this is an NSFW fan that made this.
What?
NSFW needed a polling system that wouldn't break under pressure, and this was made.
How do we have such great...
I don't know.
Viewing us.
We have the best fans in the world.
Best fans in the world. Thank you, Chad. Strawpoll.me/933. We'll keep an eye on that one. Can you do more than one vote? Or it watches your IP address. I'm sure they did it right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So remember all of the speculation about a Facebook phone? And I kept saying, why would they do a phone? Mark Zuckerberg says, no. Why would we do a phone? It wouldn't make sense for us to do a phone. It was on the earnings call, by the way. Here's another surprise. Facebook's earnings going down again. Online sales, ad sales soft. Zuckerberg said Facebook is the most used app on all platforms, Android, iPhone, BlackBerry, whatever. So there's little need to get into hardware. Well, I thought that all along. Facebook's stock price is now $23. It was $38 at its IPO. $23. I guess we can now officially call that a failed IPO. Yes?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's too early. I think people want to say right away, oh, it's a hit or oh, it's not. You know, Apple, at, you know, shortly after its IPO, took a dive. And about a year afterwards, it was just kind of stalled out. And I sold my Apple stock that I bought after the IPO. But so I don't necessarily – I think it's too early. But I think what we're learning is that Facebook is just another business, internet business supported by advertising,
right?
Which is hard to do.
Right.
And I think people kind of were dazzled by, you know, Facebook's history and the movie and certainly its growth. You know, it's got, you know, almost a billion users. But at the same time, monetizing them is not easy with advertising.
Right. They need to come up, and this is was the bet was. I thought Facebook was a strong IPO, and the bet was they have some magic sauce that's going to make money for them in online advertising. But if it's just more click banner ads, it's not going to.
So
do
far,
it.
They haven't found it.
They haven't found it.
It's not like Google, which truly did come up with an amazing way to do online advertising before it went public.
Right.
It was so relevant to what you were searching for.
Right.
And I don't see relevant ads when I use Facebook.
No, they're horrible. They're worthless. And yet, I like Facebook. Well, now, wait a minute. Now, am I the only one who likes Facebook? Because that's the other thing. We keep seeing polls that people hate Facebook. They just have to use it.
I like Facebook.
I like it.
I don't like it as much as Twitter, but I do like it.
I like Twitter, too. Speaking of the Twitter, a couple of Twitter stories. Apple reportedly. See, this is a dumb story. Okay, I'm sorry. This is in the New York Times technology section. Evelyn Roosley and Nick Bilton, who I love. Nick's a good friend. Apple officials said to consider stake in Twitter. That's like meaningless. I considered a stake in Twitter and then rejected it when I found out how much they wanted. Anybody could consider a stake.
And then the Wall Street Journal said that they did their considering a year ago or more.
Apple has considered an investment in the hundreds of millions of dollars, one that could value Twitter at more than $10 billion. These people, this is what I hate. I hate this kind of blind source stuff, right? People briefed in the matter. These people said they declined to be named because discussions were private.
Even that part doesn't bother me. But when you get four paragraphs into it, is when they say, oh, and by the way, these talks aren't actually happening now. And we don't know if they'll ever come back. And then the rest of the story is, but if they do, wouldn't it be neat? And here's
why. So speculative.
I mean, it went from forgive me because I'm not a print journalist. It went from reporting to sort of like a short story. Like, well, here's what would be neat, and here's why it could happen.
Can I say something together? In technology, anyway, the Times has been doing that more and more. Very speculative stuff.
Well, so is the Journal, too. They both have.
It feels like they have sources. Apple's, what it really feels like is
yes,
Apple's calling them up and saying, hey, could you write a story that says.
So here's
a bunch of icky stuff that happened at the end at the end of last week, and we kind of talked about this last time I was on Mac Break with you, Leo, and the whole thing about how much it sucks to work at Apple Retail.
Yeah.
So there was a story about an explosion at an Apple supplier.
Right.
Or a gas leak at an Apple supplier this weekend. One person dead, four people injured, or five people, I guess, dead, one of them. No, five. One person died, four right. people are injured.
Right.
And then when you read more into the story, it turns out that that same company, Catcher, is also a supplier for Dell and for HP and Lenovo, and I cannot remember who the other one was. And then come to find out it was actually something that happened in their wastewater treatment facility. Had nothing to do with anybody's manufacturing at all. But a number of reputable news organizations said explosion or gas leak at Apple supplier injures and kills. And it's link baity and it's sort of awful and it's a terrible story. And the thing is, it's a tragic story and it's something that we should, if we're interested in that kind of thing, we should pay attention to, but just splashing Apple's name on the front of it when, I mean,
it's clearly a bid to get views.
Right.
And it has nothing to do with the story. And right. I'm seeing that more and more. I expect it from blogs. That's, you know, Mashable, of course, they're going to have link bait. TechCrunch, of course, is going to have link bait. But from the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, I hate to see that. I'm just, maybe I have an illusion about these guys that, I don't know, Houston Chronicle would never do that, would they, Dwight?
Oh, never, not at all.
Is there so much pressure now to get clicks that you have to do this?
Well, I think that what they're doing is you have a story, Apple is, you know, that company does supply things to Apple. You want people to pay attention to it. And so the editor says, or maybe the reporter says, put Apple in the lead. And so Apple goes in the lead. The reporter may actually have written it with, you know, straight, and the editor sees, oh, this is Apple. You know, let's put them in the lead. The more ethical thing to do would be, you know, to write the story strictly that a supplier for Apple and many other, if you want to do that, and then make sure you make clear very high up, you know, that it was wastewater and that it wasn't involved in the manufacturing process. You do that in the second graph. That's probably the better way to do that story and still get the point that this is part of Apple. The other thing is there's a backstory involving Apple and safety and the previous explosion in the Foxconn plant. And so I think that people, you know, they want to invoke kind of that memory of it, the whole issue of safety in this. But it's all in the writing and it's all in the presentation and the way that story was structured. Yeah, that was not correctly done.
It's also part of the year-long narrative that started with Mike Daisy in the New York Times, too, right?
About
Which has since been debunked. But they just don't care.
Right.
And that's been sort of a running throughout the year, right? Even though it has been debunked, at least as far as the Mike Daisy part is concerned. And certainly Apple has done some stuff. And I don't mean to make it sound like, well, Apple can do no wrong, because certainly they can. Things at Foxconn have been bad for a long time, especially by our standards, but by, you know, the standards of some of the people that work in China as well. But I mean, it just felt like it was part of that same thing. Oh, here's Apple not giving a expletive deleted about their workers again. And, you know, when there was really a lot more going on and very little, if any of it, had actually to do with Apple.
Of course, was it in the Wall Street Journal where they said the government invented the internet? Gordon Krovitz's. That was an opinion piece, though, right? Or was it?
It was an opinion piece full of things that weren't true, though.
Full of lies.
He said that Xerox invented the internet, and you can't find a single person.
I think at no point was Xerox involved.
You can't find a single person who knows anything about the history of the internet who believes that Xerox invented the internet.
And, of course, Vint Cerf, who actually did invent the internet, was quick to debunk it, saying Krovitz's article was full of stuff he could use to fertilize his garden.
And the guy who wrote the book about Xerox that Krovitz cited said, Krovitz doesn't know what he's talking about.
The government, in fact, did invent the internet, just so people know. Well, the government was involved in the internet. It's really...
The government invented something kind of rudimentary
and they hired BBN to create...
That became the internet.
The internet. Yeah. And if you want to learn the story, there's a great book by Katie Hafner called Where Wizards Stay Up Late. It's a wonderful story about
James Licklider, and
he was at the Defense Department. Saying, we got to get these computers talking. They brought in BBN in Boston. They developed protocols that would make it possible. TCP/IP. Vint Cerf invented that. It was Stanford and who were the no, it was the SRI, maybe the first two connections. Government funded the whole thing, for crying out loud. In fact, anybody who's been around for any length of time, and I guess probably all of you are in this group, remember the National Science Foundation, which was funding the internet backbone, said, okay, we're going to let commercial companies be involved now, and we're going to let Sprint and AT&T and others, and we're going to allow commercial traffic. That was not so long. It was like 94.
Mm-hmm.
That changed. That's when you first got commercialism on the internet.
Well, 90, I think, was
when it 90? Yeah. Remember that?
Right. Well, and they allowed commercial traffic. The NSF continued to run it and then turned it over short, I think maybe in the 93, 94 time frame.
That's where I'm
confused. And there was a huge outcry from internet purists who were afraid that the internet would go all to hell if AT&T and Sprint ran it and MCI. And of course, that didn't happen. Well, it may have happened depending on.
I don't know. Yeah, it might have. 687 votes on our poll at strawpoll.me/933. It slowed down. Boy, it's almost neck and neck. iPhone's ecosystem or Android's free apps. That might have been a little bit slanted the way that was phrased, but 47% iPhone, 43% Android, 6% Windows Phone, and 23% BlackBerry fans.
Yeah, I've been watching it. It's been neck and neck since it was launched.
Oh, it's more like votes now. Wait a minute. I shouldn't have mentioned it. This is great. We're going to do this in every show from now on.
And I forgot to mention Dan Dirks was the creator of this.
You can see his name at the bottom, but Dan is so unassuming that he put it in a completely unillegible font. So it's down there. Very, very dark. I can't even read it.
Dark blue on black.
Hey, by the way, just a plug. I'm going to be doing a Reddit Ask Me Anything on Tuesday. We'll start that at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern time. If you go to Reddit's AMA section, you can see they have a schedule of all the different AMAs. I, as Akhtar, did one a couple of days ago or maybe a week or two ago, and it went great. And we thought it'd be fun to do it. Ask Me Anything is a great feature of Reddit where you just say, hey, I'm Leo Laporte. I was on Tech TV. If you want to ask me anything about Twitter, Tech TV, do. 8 p.m. Eastern, July 31st. Please participate. It'll be fun. I'm looking forward to it. And, yes, it's not an Ask Me Almost Anything. It's an Ask Me Anything. Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's Maddest Writer, will be doing it August 2nd. I think that'll be very interesting. Stan Lee's going to do one August 14th.
Hmm.
That's fun. Hans Zimmer coming up. I just love it. And the truth is the most interesting AMAs are not celebrities. They're people, you know, I am a truck driver. And you just always want to know, where do you pee? And then that just, you know, goes on and on and on. So,
Leo, do you think Mitt Romney and Barack Obama will do one?
I would love to. That's the kind of thing that would transform electoral politics in this country.
Yeah.
Never happen. That's why.
I think, well, I don't know. I think it could happen.
Maybe. Good question. Chatroom said, well, I could ask you anything, but will you answer anything? We'll see.
Ask all you want.
No, I will answer anything. I will be very absolutely candid. Why not? What the hell? Reddit, I got no secrets. Reddit.com/IAMA, right? Or /r/IAMA for Ask Me Anything. That'll be fun Tuesday, and I hope you'll stop by. AOL has re... I don't know why I'm looking at this article. Where did this... Is this a link in our... To keep its 24 million users from fleeing, AOL redesigns its mail. That is a Somebody story you will not hear on Twitter. I don't know. Who cares? Does anybody care? Not me. What did I say we were going to talk about when we came back? Did we talk about it? Twitter? A year ago?
I think it was the Facebook phone, wasn't it?
Facebook phone, you're right. We mentioned Samsung, $5.9 billion profit. And believe it or not, even though Samsung makes everything from dishwashers to bulldozers, a significant amount of that from phone sales. 79% increase. This year, Samsung unseated Nokia as the number one phone manufacturer. 50 million phones sold. They also are the world's top TV maker and the world's top bulldozer maker. No, I don't know. They may not be. I don't know who is the biggest bulldozer manufacturer.
I think it's Caterpillar.
No. It's got to be a Korean company. Daihatsu or somebody. Who is the number one? All right, chat room to work. Komatsu. That's it. Hyundai. Caterpillar? Who is, find out, there's somebody's got to know this, the number one bulldozer manufacturer in the world.
See, I used to work with a financial analyst on TV.
How do you find that stuff out?
He always said that Caterpillar was a big investment as China's middle class started growing as they started gearing up for the Olympics. So this was a while ago that I was working with them.
Caterpillar
was huge.
I don't, Scotland Collins is saying it's IKEA. I don't think it's IKEA. I could be wrong.
You have to assemble the IKEA bulldozer before you can use it.
They send you a little awesome Allen wrench and some indecipherable instructions, and you're go. You go, baby. This portion of the show brought to you by Stamps.com. When's the last time you went to the post office? Long line, right? Hard to park, pain in the butt, surly employees. Not anymore. Now, if the employees at the post office are surly, it's your fault because Stamps.com brings a post office to... right here to your desk is so great. You're going to love Stamps.com. Lets you print basically the fundamental, the bottom line, the elevator pitch is, what if you could print postage from your computer, your printer? No special ink, no postage meter, just Stamps.com. Now, wouldn't that be cool? What if I throw in a USB scale? It means you just plop that letter or package on there. You know exactly what the postage is. You don't have to type it in. It just does it. I could make it even better. What if you could print right on the envelope with your company's logo? It looks so professional. And you could pull the name and address from QuickBooks if that's what you use. If you're an Amazon or eBay seller, you can use that. It'll automatically do it. If it's international postage, it'll print out all the forms you need. Now how much would you pay? How about nothing? How about Stamps.com for 30 days? A no-risk trial. Wait a minute. Stop. You went to Stamps.com, and I see that $80 special values. That's a good deal. That's a good deal. Nothing wrong with $80 free, but how about this? Click that microphone in the upper right-hand corner and enter the offer code TWIT. Now see what happens. T-W-I-T. Press the go. And whoa! Just went to $110. $55 in free postage. You get that scale for free. You just pay $5 shipping and handling. To make that up, they give you a $5 supply kit and a four-week trial. Now how much would you pay? Nothing. Stamps.com. You're going to love it. It's really, really great. Stop going to the post office. By the way, post office loves Stamps.com. They give you discounts you can't get at the post office, 21%, up to 21% on express mail, up to 15% on priority mail. I don't know why you're not using Stamps.com right now. Go ahead and try it. Let me tell you, the people in Canada wish they had Stamps.com. The people in Great Britain, they're watching this right now going, we may have the Olympics, mate, but you've got Stamps.com. Try it free today. Use the offer code TWIT. According to Wikipedia, Caterpillar is the world's largest manufacturer of construction and mining equipment, diesel and natural gas engines, and industrial gas turbines. Thank you, chat room. Komatsu number two. Samsung not even on the list. So there.
That's how the whole thing started. Where's IKEA?
Where is IKEA on that list? Twice as big as Komatsu. And Tonka, if you include the Tonka trucks, would be number three. Phil says the biggest bull dust creator, John C. Dvorak. Moving on, AT&T did all right. We were talking earlier about their quarterly results, $3.9 billion profit. They sold 3.7 million iPhones. But as you said, that's not a big deal for them. Samsung Galaxy S3, 10 million phones. But nevertheless, survey says the iPhone 5 is still the most wanted phone. New survey from 451 Research ChangeWave found that Apple's iPhone 5, or whatever it's called, is seeing an unprecedented wave of advanced demand higher than any other iPhone model has had before. 14% of respondents were very likely to buy the iPhone 5. How many of you in the chat in the audience are very likely to buy the next iPhone? 14%. See that? It's exactly the same. Three hands. I don't know. I'm just a little worried. How about Google Fiber? Who wants that? Show of hands. Everybody. Yeah, 100%. Did you see the details on Google Fiber? Launched in Kansas City. I didn't realize this. It's a gigabit down, but also a gigabit up.
Yep. It's synchronous, not asynchronous.
Wow.
The way they're marketing it is really interesting. You don't necessarily can't get it in your neighborhood unless there's a critical mass of people who want it in your neighborhood.
So go door to door.
Right. And then you pay $300 to get it to your door.
Oh.
It's a $300 build out fee.
Well, that's not bad.
A minimum of 70 a month. And the television, the television thing, a couple of people picked up on that, is that this puts Google is going to go into the cable TV business.
Right.
They're going to offer competition to Comcast and AT&T UVerse and DirecTV using this system. And if it expands beyond Kansas City, they could be a national player at that.
$120 a month, which is less than my. I pay $150 a month for Comcast plus, you know, HBO, Showtime, Skinemax, and Stars, and then I get a super duper 20 megabit broadband. That's $150. For $30 less, I could get gigabit, terabyte of storage on the internet. So your Google Drive, I guess, is now a terabyte.
Free tablet.
You get a Nexus 7 for remote control. And you get major broadcast networks, hundreds of fiber channels, on-demand movies and shows, premium movie channels, and additional fees. So maybe it's about the same.
But they are still trying to get the TV companies to sign up.
That they have to make those deals. Then there's a third. So the $70 is gigabit only. still with a Google Drive terabyte. And then they're going to offer free internet with average speeds, 5 megabits down and 1 megabit up. It's free.
After you've paid for the build-out, yeah.
$300 build-out, free for life. But you have to. There's one negative. You have to live in Kansas City. No, nothing wrong with Kansas City. I just don't live there.
Free for 7 years.
Oh, okay.
Free for 7 years?
Yeah. I'm just, that's...
Is that what it says? 7 years free?
Yeah.
They guarantee it for the next 7 years.
That's an accounting thing, isn't it? 7 years is...
It sounds like you broke a mirror and you get 7 years of bad internet or something. Google will deploy the fiber network in areas where there is the most interest first. They're calling each build-out a rally. Kansas City residents can vote by paying a $10 fee to pre-register. Then there's a fiberhood zone. I live in a fiberhood where a minimum number of users need to pre-register in order to have them bring fiber to that neighborhood.
Does it say what that minimum is?
No, maybe it does in this video. It'll be offering free gigabit connectivity to schools. That's good. Here's the video. We could play a little
bit.
The web is amazing.
Most Americans don't have access to internet connections fast enough to showcase everything it has to offer. Your internet speed shouldn't be a bottleneck keeping you from accessing the best of the web. Introducing Google Fiber.
You think this is a business for them?
Faster than what most Americans use today, fiber's possibilities are unlimited.
Is that the plan? Is this something the business they want to be in, or are they just tweaking the telcos?
Your fiber and Google.
Both.
Google wants to build fiber where people are most excited about it. Starting with Kansas City, they're creating fiberhoods and setting a goal for
fiberhoods
based on density.
We got fiberhood here.
Certain number of pre-registrations to have fiber.
They didn't say certain number.
If you live in Kansas City, pre-register on the fiber website with a $10 fee by September 9th. Pre-registering matters. If your fiberhood doesn't reach its goal by September 9th, you won't be selected for installation.
We get a big red X on your fiberhood.
Pre-registrations get fiber first, so make sure you talk to your neighbors and get them to pre-register too. After September 9th, check out the fiber website. If your fiberhood is on the list, you'll be able to choose a Google Fiber package and have it installed.
Wow.
When you pre-register, you're not only bringing fiber optic infrastructure into your home, you're helping to connect local schools, hospitals, and libraries free of charge. Let's do this for KC. Let's do this together.
Welcome to the fiberhood. I'd pay $10, but you know, I guess you get that back. No, you don't get any money back. It's just giving Google $10.
I believe it goes to your $300 installation fee.
If you're in the fiberhood.
If you're in the fiberhood.
Wow. And they do. They're going to put this in other cities, or no? What's the plan?
They haven't said. I don't think.
If you live in a crappy neighborhood with a bunch of crackheads and homeless people, as Web6275 does, you're screwed. You got to live in an affluent neighborhood with lots of people. Fiberhood. Oh, and they waive the $300 fee if you sign up for the TV plan. Now, Verizon stopped doing... Fios is... They're not putting Fios in any new places. In fact, Dvorak said this. He said, there's no plan to do fiber everywhere. This is just to get their build the name, the reputation of Verizon up. They'll stop as soon as they can. And he was right. They did. They stopped. You know, they could put it in a lot more places than I think he thought. I'm going to move to a fiberhood.
Well, I think one of the statements that Google made was that they want to encourage the other ISPs and cable companies to innovate more, to do more. This is kind of
a shot
across the bow, you know, to say you guys better get on it or we'll do it.
How could you compete with this? Is this even a business model?
Well, you know, in most big cities, there's a lot of what's called dark fiber. Uh-huh. There's a lot of fiber that was put in the ground during the late 2000s, early 2000s to mid 2000s, and then the dot-com bust happened and it never went anywhere. There's a bunch of it here in Houston. And some companies have kind of bought it up and are just sitting on it. And this is, I think, what Google is thinking about. Use dark fiber.
Yeah. Does Neil Patel live in Kansas City? Chat room saying he said he's going to go door to door. Of The Verge says he's going to go door to door to canvass his neighbors and get them all to. So I would do that. Hi, I'm your neighbor. You may recognize me. I was the guy streaking earlier. I would like to get you to sign up for Google Fiber, please.
Can I have $10?
Can I have $10? Padre SJ says the Jesuit residence in Kansas City has already signed up. I guess we know where Padre will be broadcasting from starting next week on Twyet. Wow. I want it. So, but seriously, is Comcast or Verizon, are they looking at this going, oh, no, no, they're not. Are they?
They're talking about it.
Yeah, I know what they're saying. The CEO saying, Smithers, come here. Can we do this? No, sir. There's no financial viability for this whatsoever. Okay, thanks. See ya. That's it. That's the talk.
Poor Smithers. One would hope that if it goes well, and if they actually, I mean, do make a big noise of it, if it succeeds, that would get consumers, you know, to start complaining to their current ISPs.
Like, those guys in Kansas City have a gigabit. Why can't we?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I'm actually curious about choosing Kansas City, too.
Well, remember, there was this campaign. In fact, I lobbied hard for the city of Petaluma. It would have transformed the TWIB business model if we had gigabit here. So it's good for business. And we didn't win.
I'm sorry. So did Kansas City lobby for it? I must have missed.
Oh, yeah. Everybody did. There was a whole. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. God, yeah. Was it Kansas City that renamed itself to Google? No, there was a town, though, that renamed itself to Google. They lost. I don't know what Kansas City. If that didn't win, I don't know what Kansas City did.
Okay.
I'm having the feeling it has to do with hookers and champagne, but I don't know. The hardware consists of three small boxes, according to The Verge.
Topeka changed its name to Kansas.
Topeka.
To Google Kansas.
To Google Kansas. That didn't work.
Didn't work.
And then Google, I think, changed its name to Topeka briefly, just to kind of honor them back. That's kind of cute. But and that wasn't enough. That's what I got to honor.
Well,
I think there's other factors. How much dark fiber, for instance, would be a factor, wouldn't it?
If Topeka had permanently changed its name to Google, that might have been the trick.
They said that's a stunt. We don't buy it. I like it that you get a Nexus 7 tablet as a remote. That's almost kind of makes up for the $300 installation, right? Google Play will not be integrated initially, which I think is kind of interesting. You will have, listen to this. You get a DVR that can record up to 8 shows at once and save 500 hours of HDTV.
2 terabytes. That's what the middle box is. So you get one box in the home that'll handle everything that's going on. The second box there is the 2 terabyte DVR. And then the third box is just a TV box. It's much smaller that you can hook your TV up to.
And is it Google TV is the interface? It must be. Looks a little like a Logitech review.
Huh. So on that 2 terabyte hard drive, is that only your stuff, or are they creating essentially a huge RAID where everybody's data is on everybody else's box?
I think it's just a conventional DVR.
Look at that. It's a router.
That's what I want, is I want an ISP to do a distributed RAID so that we can share everybody else's space. And for those people who don't need a lot, you know, they essentially can contribute to the amount. Of course, you'd have to have a huge amount of privacy protections. But I think that
wouldn't that be cool, though? Yeah.
On a gigabit fiber network, you could do that.
Yeah.
You could do that. Distributed
mesh.
Computing.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's really interesting. And I guess that's really Google's point, is everything changes when you get to that. Right. I mean, the truth is nobody needs gigabit. That's so much faster than any website you're visiting.
You're totally constrained by the server on the other end and all the hops it's taking.
Right. So really all of the advantage comes to you from what the internet service provider is doing locally. That's where you're going to see the gigabit, right? So if they're doing movies or, you know, that's why you can do 8 streams at once, things like that.
Should be awfully cool, though.
Oh, I want it. Netflix on it. Well, did you see that Consumer Reports had a survey, a customer satisfaction survey. See, I think this is apples to apples, in which they rated Walmart's Vudu service, Apple's iTunes, Amazon's Instant and Prime offerings, and Hulu against Netflix. And Netflix came in 6 out of 8, beating only video on demand channels and Hulu Plus for streaming services. Disc rentals number one, beating Redbox, Blockbuster. That's, of course, not exactly what Reed Hastings doesn't want to hear, since it's the streaming that's the future of Netflix. Anything else here? New York Times dropped its BlackBerry app.
And its Palm Pre app.
Well, that I understand. Right. I think there's still quite a few people who use the BlackBerry, but they must know. They must...
Particularly in New York and the financial district. So I think that was really interesting.
They must know. Yeah, they have the stats of how many people are using it, right?
Right. It's not worth it for them to continue to develop it.
That's a bad sign. That might be the worst sign I've heard yet for RIM. If here you are in the financial capital of the world, where presumably a lot of people are carrying BlackBerries and they're not reading the New York Times on it, that sounds like it's maybe not so good for BlackBerry. Not so good for Zynga either. Stock price tumbling. Their second quarter earnings fell short of analyst estimates. Always a bad idea. You always want to beat the estimate, right? How do you beat the estimates?
Well, no, I mean,
what Apple does, which is sandbag.
This last time.
Yeah, it didn't work this time. But normally, see, I think Tim Cook doesn't quite have his hand around the throat of the financial analysts like Steve Jobs did. But Steve would always say, "Oh, we're going to do terrible. It's going to be a horrible year." And then the analysts would downgrade.
They beat by like $1 billion or something like 48 cents a share, yeah, exactly. I think. And still everybody was like, yeah, but it should have been like $5 billion and you know, like $1.50 a share. I can't remember what the actual expectations were. But I mean, they actually did well, but not as well as everyone expected.
Are you talking about Zynga or Apple?
I'm talking about Apple.
Zynga lost $22 million.
Well, no, I'm not talking about them. Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, you say don't disappoint the analysts, but even if you, I mean, is it?
You're asking if you have control over that, or no, you're saying, is it a good idea anyway? Well, no, the idea would be just be 1 or 2 cents above what the analysts predicted.
Well, yeah, that'd be great. Yeah. But the only problem is if you can't guide at all what the analysts are predicting. I mean, I was amazed to hear that Facebook actually, did it meet expectations? I mean, not analyst expectations, but it made what it said it was going to make.
Right.
It met its guidance.
Right.
And then got hammered.
Right.
Because
I don't understand this stuff. You think I understand the stock market?
Well, I was hoping somebody might be able to.
Does anybody understand the stock market? Anybody? All right. We're going to take a break. Come back with more. Great panel here. We've got do we have any more business to do? Chad, we did the week ahead. We did the promo. I talked about the fact that I'm going to do an Ask Me Anything on Reddit. We got Twiet coming up. We got a new show for iPhone lovers, i5 for the iPhone with Sarah Lane. That's Mondays right after Twiet, right?
Correct.
So you really got a double hit there on Monday. At noon, Twiet, and then like at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern time.
It's right before Twiet.
Before Twiet, 11 a.m.
Right.
Okay, right after So Monday, TNT with the tech news at 10 a.m., i5 for the iPhone, 11 a.m., and then Twiet at noon. What a great lineup. That's must-see Wednesday, Thursday, Mondays. Must-see.
It's a must-see week. Just tune in all the time.
It's a must-see week. Our portion of This Week in Tech brought to you by Gazelle. Now, see if you're among the 14% thinking of buying that iPhone 5, now would be a good time to find out what the old iPhone is worth so you can make a little moolah, a little cash on the side. Go to gazelle.com. It's very easy now. They've simplified this, and I like it because it turns out most of the people who were using Gazelle were selling these products, Apple stuff, iPhones, iPads, iPods, Apple TVs, desktops, laptops, displays. There's some BlackBerries. There's some Samsung Galaxy phones, HTC, Motorola, LG, Android phones, the Nokia. Just wondering let's see what a BlackBerry would be worth. Just curious. BlackBerry Bold. Wow, so you can actually get money for it. Let's say I got a torch. Perfect condition, because I used it for a minute. And I'm just curious if I get any money for this thing. No water damage. Calculating your offer. And $100. Yeah, it's halfway towards a new iPhone. Let's see what else. That's good. Maybe you got the old iPhone, the 4S, and you want to say, hey, how much can I get towards an iPhone 5? Let's say I got a 32 gigabyte, $280 in good, if it's in flawless condition, $300. I get a little profit. There's a profit deal here. Now, this is the cool thing. You can get a check mailed right to you, PayPal, of course, transfer, or, and this is my recommendation, get the Amazon gift card. It's worth an extra 5%. GAZELLE.com. Now, here's the really cool part. You can get this quote for 30 days. It's good for 30 days. So I got to tell you, this phone is going to go down in value day after day after day after day. So lock in that price now, and it's good for 30 days. They pay the shipping on anything worth more than a buck. And they will, yeah, absolutely take broken or damaged stuff, too. G-A-Z-E-L-L-E, gazelle.com. The best way to trade in those old gadgets and get some cash for the new ones. Get this. Gazelle has paid almost $50 million to over 300,000 customers. Some very happy people. It's a really good service. We use it all the time here. Gazelle. G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. Resile the easy way, it says there. Should say recycle. Little point of order. Recycle. It is a kind of recycling. It's somebody else will use it. In fact, oh, he just left. Cabo Zone is here. He has his. He bought a Galaxy 2 from Gazelle. He's loving it. Oh, just a word to anybody at the London Olympics. Please do not tweet during the Olympics. Apparently, if you could avoid sending non-urgent text messages and tweets, the network will appreciate it. Apparently, overloaded network is affecting television coverage because commentators can't get information from the GPS satellite nav or anything. It's all broken because everybody's tweeting. And, of course, what happened when they asked that, a bunch of angry Brits tweeted it. What do you mean we can't use Twitter? A network issue caused by hundreds of thousands of fans. They said this would be the Twitter Olympics, and it is. Hundreds of thousands of fans lined the street of London to cheer the British team on, sending messages from their Twitter. He said, IOC spokesman said, if you could just spread it out a little bit. Of course, if you want to send something, we're not going to say don't, you can't do it. It's just, if it's not urgent, just please kind of take it easy. That was literally, this is the quote. It's just, if it's not an urgent one, please kind of take it easy. That's kind of amazing. I can only imagine the strain on the network from all of that stuff. And YouTube, I guess, is doing a lot of this stuff. I did want to give credit to Nick Bilton for a good Bits blog piece on Craigslist. Did you read this? Pointing out that Craigslist has really transformed advertising and actually put some newspapers out of business by replacing their classified ads with the free Craigslist website. They've not been so friendly to people who want to aggregate or in some way, you know, take the information from Craigslist and make it more easy. They use as a case in point Eric Dementhon, a 27-year-old programmer who built an application that placed Craigslist's apartment ads on an online map. So you look at the map, you say, I want that neighborhood. You can quickly find the listing, something Craigslist did not. So he made something he called Pad Mapper. There it is. Last week, Craigslist served him with a lawsuit claiming an infringement of copyright and trademark. But Dementhon said, I'm kind of disappointed. I was always a great admirer of what Craigslist is doing. I'm just trying to help people save time. And in fact, lawyers say he's not violating any. There is no trademark or copyright on classified advertising. Furthermore, Craigslist said, oh, we only go after sites that hurt our servers that use our bandwidth. And this PadMapper does not do that. PadMapper actually uses search results. Is not hitting Craigslist at all. They're using a service called Three Taps that goes to search. It's Google. They're using Google's bandwidth. So I think it's a provocative article. We actually tried to get Craig on This Week in Google, and his people said that Mr. Newmark is not doing any interviews. And now I think I understand why. Doesn't want to really talk about this. Good article, Nick, on that one. Any comment? Nothing to say? You're uncharacteristically silent.
Well, I mean, Nick's interesting point is that Craigslist has said that they don't like these services because they hog bandwidth.
Not the case, though.
But not the case with this one. So there's some of
they don't like these services because people go to them instead of... But it's funny because it doesn't hurt Craigslist. You still have to go through Craigslist to get the listing.
Yeah, when you click on the item on the map, it takes you to a Craigslist item, doesn't it?
Yeah, John C. Dvorak's son created a... one of the things Craigslist does not do is search across geographic regions. You have to search your region.
There are a hell of a lot of things that Craigslist does not do.
And John's son created something that would do that and also shut down by Craigslist.
Does Craigslist have an API?
No. You have to scrape the site. That's why.
Well, that may be their problem with a lot of companies don't want you scraping.
Yeah, Craig Newmark says we take issue with only services which consume a lot of bandwidth, which I could understand, except that PadMapper doesn't.
Craigslist has thrived for an awful long time by not changing and being almost the same as it was in 1985, right. And it's kind of worked for them. It's not clear whether it'll work for them forever, though, and I don't quite see why they don't do an API.
Seemed like it'd be a great thing. How do they make money? The listings are free. I don't use Craigslist.
Job listings cost money. Does it cost money to do an apartment listing? They make a lot of money off job listings.
And there are no ads. This seems like this would be good. I don't understand.
They used to charge for adult listings, but they don't do them anymore.
So Nick says, why hasn't someone managed to unseat Craigslist, a site that has barely changed in close to two decades? Because, he says, it has dug an effective moat by cultivating an exaggerated image of doing good that keeps its customers loyal, while behind the scenes it bullies any rivals that come near and stifles innovation. I can't say I disagree. And PadMapper is still up, right? Even though it's being sued.
Right.
Still working.
Now, Craig is very
I feel bad for... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Craig is very active on Twitter, and I wonder if you were to aim some questions at him on Twitter, if he would respond to it there.
Oh, no, that's too much like reporting.
Craig has a good heart, but I don't quite understand this stuff.
No, I like Craig, and I don't even... Maybe it's not Craig. Maybe it's Jim, is the guy who runs the
company. Yeah, Craig is not the CEO of Craigslist.
Jim Buckmaster's the CEO, right. Yeah. Right.
Craig is just a tech support person.
So. That's pretty funny. Really? He's the tech
yes,
support.
Yes, he does tech support.
Yeah, he's doing customer service.
He's a very sweet guy. I've interviewed him on Tech TV. We interviewed him quite a bit. He's a very sweet guy. Unfortunately, is it Nick Demenson, the guy who created PadMaster, says he says I'm going to keep it running, but I don't even have a lawyer. I don't know what I'm going to do. But he says I think the site's useful, so I'm going to just keep it running and see what happens. We might have to do a Kickstarter for him. Can you do Kickstarters for legal aid?
I think you can do Kickstarters for anything.
Anything.
As long as you want to keep it around. And if not, Indiegogo.
Indiegogo. All right, guys. I thank you for your great service here in the service of tech knowledge everywhere. Mr. Mac OS Ken. Ken Ray, great to have you. MacOSKen.com for your daily dose of Macintosh news. So no howls from Mountain Lion users. That's good news.
No, I had one person write to me and say that she hated it, but that was it. I can't fault it for anything that happened. It's just it turns out I don't like it.
I think the big issue is it's no different. It's so little different that it's like, what's the change?
It's
actually
20 bucks
the
different.
Dock is not as shiny, and I'm really pissed off about that.
God. Darn it, the dock is not as shiny. Really?
It doesn't reflect.
It is kind of a dim dock.
Well, that's the sidebar dock. You need to put it down to the bottom.
Oh,
no, I have it at the bottom, and it's still not as shiny.
Well, mine is on the left. Let's see if I put it on the bottom. Now I get the three-dimensional. But no, it's duller. It's like now it looks like it's sitting on a...
It's like brushed aluminum.
Ew. What is that made out of? No, it looks like Formica. It's on a Formica dock. That's weird.
Oh, it's like that plastic, that shiny plastic they put in cars.
Faux leather.
It's Corinthian leather.
Mr. Dwight Silverman is at the Houston Chronicle, blogs.cron.com/techblog, and also does a great weekly show on Pacifica Radio there in Houston on Wednesdays called...
Technology Bites. You can hear it. We stream it at 8 o'clock Central on kpft.org. And this week, we'll hear Tales of DEF CON when three of my colleagues return.
Oh, they were from the Technology Bites colleagues, not the Houston Chronicle.
Yes. Jay Lee, our colleague Flicted, and Barrett Cannon all went out. I'm not going to say which one got his Twitter account hacked.
Oh, it's obviously Flicted. Anybody named Flicted, that's obvious.
No. Flicted is an awesome guy, and he also is probably the most paranoid of the three, so I don't think it was him.
Ah, okay. Cool. Thank you, Dwight. Great to have you, as always.
Thank you.
The technologizer, Harry McCracken. You can read him on time.com, which I have been doing religiously. It's awesome.
Thank you.
And also technologizer.com. Thanks for being here. We appreciate it.
My pleasure, Leo.
Thank you all for joining us. Twit is every Sunday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 2200 UTC. You can watch live, but if you can't watch live, it is nice, you know, because I think if we do some more of those straw polls, that will be nice to have that live on it. Should I check that one more time? Just to see how the final vote, strawpoll.me/933. And the final vote, iPhone's ecosystem or Android's free apps. And the final, let's go to results. Yeah, it does only let you vote once. Boy, neck and neck, 46% Android, 45% iPhone, 5% Windows, 3% BlackBerry, almost 1,000 votes. I bet we'll have 1,000 votes before I wrap this up.
I wish you could embed this. I would love to use this on TechBlog. I wish this was embedded.
Isn't that awesome?
Yeah.
Talk to the creator. Hey, Chad, let's remind me. We'll do this on a regular basis. I love this.
Yeah.
We can have a poll at the beginning of every show. Thank you, Dan Dirks. Really nice job.
Yeah.
Really nice. And Dan.
And we haven't, we at Twit just put it through the ringer and it didn't break.
No. That's a lot of votes in a few minutes. He's a good programmer. Dan Dirks, thank you. If you don't get to see it live, you could still vote, but it probably wouldn't matter. But you can't, and you can always get the on-demand versions. We've got audio and video available at twit.tv. We appreciate it. Thanks for being here. And then next time, that's what I'll do. I'll chirp the URL. It'll all go full circle.
Perfect.
It'll all go full circle. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next week. Another Twit is in the can.
Yay.
Maybe it runs on Squarespace. Maybe that's why it never breaks.
Doing the Twit, baby. Doing the Twit, all right. Doing the Twit, baby. Doing the Twit, all right. Doing the Twit, baby. Doing the Twit, all right.
Olympics fans, please do not tweet unless you have to.
Whoa.
What was that?
Poor Berigmus. Did a big truck just go by?
Sorry, I ate a burrito today.
Jeez Louise, sounds like elephants.
That might have been here. Sorry.
Where are you, Ken Ray? Are you in? Oh, you live under the overpass.
I'm at home. It's just... okay. I thought I had, if you give me a minute, I can actually go close one more window.
That's fine. Do you think it's going to happen a lot? I don't mind it once in a while.
It's my street. It's just outside. No, we live on a residential street. But
so somebody has a Camaro.
It's a Camaro, Leo.
That's not a Camaro. That's an El Camino.